WBUR, New York. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Talk Radio 77. WABC.
WABC, and we've got some good news today. Not some bad news, too. I'll describe what my day was like yesterday later on in the program. But the good news is, since last Monday, I've been in this studio alone. Of course, I miss my buddy, my partner, the man, the great Bernard McGuirk. And though not 100%, Bernard McGuirk is, in fact, back in studio this morning. So let's start by saying, Bernie, we missed you. We love you. Welcome back, pal.
Well, thank you, Sidney.
How you doing?
Bernie in the hizzy.
Bernie's in the hizzy.
My voice a little weak, as you can tell, but
yeah.
Don't let that distract you.
It's not going to bother me.
I will kick some M blankin' hiney.
You think so?
No, I don't. Not really. Not at all. But it is good to be back. I spent a couple of days in the hospital last week.
Yeah.
At the Sloan Kettering for tests. For tests, as they say in my old neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then I have to go back up today for an assessment of all that.
I was wondering why both Carol and Melanie, your daughter, both beautiful ladies in your family, are here today. I thought maybe after the show you guys are going to go on like a family vacation, and I was about to say I'm going somewhere too because I'm ready to take some time off, but I guess you're going back. I know last week you were supposed to be at the hospital Tuesday and Wednesday. You ended up staying Tuesday through Thursday.
Right.
You went home on Friday. I did keep the audience updated every day. You and I spoke about twice a day, and your wife, Carol, was kind enough to contact me at least once a day. In fact, at one point, you were going down for tests, and she started asking me about Al Rosenberg. Do you know who he is? Are you related?
You know, that's funny, because when she came in last week, and we were talking about, you know, I met her at WNBC Radio when I was working for Imus, or Imus was there anyway, and Howard Stern was in the afternoon. And Howard Stern used to perv on my wife, of course, along with a lot of other guys. But he played a trick on her, and Al Rosenberg worked for both Imus and Howard Stern.
Right.
And he was the guy who orchestrated the hoax.
Al did.
That David Lee Roth was coming in studio because he knew my wife was a big fan, and she burst in like a teenage Jonas Brothers groupie.
Right.
And he embarrassed her. Anyway, it was Al Rosenberg.
That's right.
And she was all excited. Well, I can't believe I couldn't remember his name.
No relation. I'm not related to Al. Al was a degenerate, funny guy, and I think he actually ran for office at one point.
He became mayor of a city in New Jersey. But he wasn't a degenerate.
Well, not like he was kind of a degenerate, a little bit.
In what respect?
The way he thought, just his – he didn't do anything. He didn't rape any little girls or anything like that.
He was the sweetest guy.
Did you like Al that much?
He was at my wedding. He was the funniest – one of the funniest guys I ever knew in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was okay.
He was great, and he still is.
I was going to say, you said he was.
No. I haven't heard from him in years, but Al Rosenberg
– he lives in New Jersey, I think, right? I believe he does. Where was he mayor?
Yeah, New Jersey. No, I don't recall what town.
Somewhere in Jersey, though. Yeah,
he was a listener, and he used to call in to Imus, and then he became, you know, Imus featured him as a. He did voices. He was Earl C. Watkins. That's my man, or something like that.
I think I do remember that now that you say that.
And then he worked for Howard too, and then there was a struggle between Imus and Howard over who Al Rosenberg worked for. Blah 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 blah.
And then he just left. That was it.
And well, at some point towards the end of WFAN, they cut him loose.
They cut him loose. Okay.
Via fax. You
okay.
Know, the way the
oh god,
the way the Radio Shark executives used to do it.
Pat Riley actually left the Knickerbockers by a fax too, and that made people in this town crazy for years. He sent the fax to the powers that be with the Knicks and said, "I'm leaving." And, of course, he's been in Miami ever since. So I guess back then, retirement by fax is kind of like today. People retire Instagram, Twitter, just on social media. They don't tell the bosses. They put a post up and, okay, see ya. It's the oddest thing.
But, yeah, the fax thing was definitely.
That was big back then,
It was a big middle finger to somebody who you were already humiliating.
Yeah.
Might as well do it in person, you know, have the integrity to do that. But they didn't. Anyway, that's how it ended with him, and I've never spoken to him since.
There you have it, the Al Rosenberg story at 6:09 on this Tuesday morning. A lot has happened, obviously. Yesterday, once again, found myself taking Eric Adams to task. I couldn't believe what a stupid guy this guy is. I'm sorry. The day after some beautiful young Asian lady is pushed onto the subways and murdered by a freak. The day after, you talk about bad timing. Eric Adams tells New Yorkers, it's your perception, the crime on the subway. It's just your perception. It's not a reality. And, just another strike against him. And I will tell you this, and these are facts. These are facts. I know it's only been 3 weeks, and it's a bit unfair to judge Eric Adams after 3 weeks, after 8 years of a terrible mayor in Bill de Blasio. But, Mr. Law and Order, crime is up in the 3 weeks since Eric Adams has taken over as mayor.
Well, he's actually, crime is up. And as far as perception goes, I mean, people are getting pushed on by the scores, being pushed off the platform
all
by
the
scores. There was an Asian woman just 2 months ago, the exact same subway stop. She was pushed, an Asian woman, by a homeless man, pushed in the exact same place. She didn't die. This one did. Perception?
Yeah, but it's not just murders or people like that. This is how stupid Eric Adams is. You know, Daniela's not taken the train in a long time. And like your wife, she's gorgeous. You know, she really is. She's in terrific shape. She took the train for the first time about a week and a half ago. And some creep was rubbing up on her, grabbed her ass, the whole thing. Now, that's a crime. That's a crime. No one fell on the track.
Bro,
nobody died. And it happens all the time.
That is sex assault.
Right.
And they have dumbed that down. They have, defined that down to nothing to, like, a traffic ticket.
I guess Eric Adams doesn't care unless it's his wife or his daughter. Then he may feel a little differently.
You know what? Let's listen to what Eric Adams said. Did you play this yesterday?
Play it again.
He just said it yesterday, so maybe you didn't. I don't know. Let's take a listen to what he said.
We know that public safety is not only actual, but it's perceived. And when you have an incident like this, the perception is what we're fighting against. This is a safe system because of the job that the transit officers have carried out and what this chief has done in this system. We're going to continue to enhance to deal with the mental health crises that we have in our system.
I would just say, what are you, stupid? I mean, it was a 40-year-old Asian woman, a vibrant Asian woman who worked for an accounting company. You tell her it's perception.
Well, she's dead, but you can tell her family that.
What
right?
If somebody was beating you over the head with a baseball bat, you know, cracking your skull, and you're like, stop, please stop. Say, oh, no, it's just perception. Bang, 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 bang.
So are you with me now? Are you there yet?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
I mean, again, he's better than de Blasio. I don't want to hear that anymore, folks. It doesn't matter.
I mean, that was just, and he hasn't walked it back.
No.
He hasn't walked it back at all. So, between that and the fact that he calls it a homeless problem, I don't care about the homeless. These are mentally disturbed, drug-addled vagrants is what they are. That's what they are. Get them the hell off the street. I have sympathy for people who are down on their luck. These guys made choices. They've been doing this for a long time. Get them off the damn street. Institutionalize them. We've been saying that for a long time here.
Long time.
It's not like a broken record.
Yeah.
Institutionalize these people. The safety of citizens like that 40-year-old Asian woman comes first before, you prioritize how you're going to make this this drug-addled vagrant feel by shoving him into some building on an island in a river, in the East River. I mean, I don't care how he feels. Get him the hell off the street.
I've said the same thing for years. I was taken to task when I first came back with you, which, by the way, we're a couple of weeks away from celebrating 6 years. And I got vilified because I hate the homeless. I hate them. And the last couple of years, I've decided, okay, let me be more humane about this. And I jumped on with Tony Oso. In the last 2 years, I handed out backpacks with goods to homeless people around Christmas time. And it felt great. I felt great. And these people, whoever they were very, very appreciative. That didn't mean they didn't go on and commit a crime later on that night. But I felt great about it. But the truth is, you know how I feel about the homeless. And I live in the city with these low lives, and I do have a beautiful wife and a beautiful young daughter and a son. And I'm leaving the city anyway, but I'm scared to death.
I can't believe that happened to your wife.
Yeah.
This is awful.
Isn't that unbelievable? Is that unbelievable?
That really is. I mean, the one time she decided to
take the train in years.
Descend into the hellscape of the New York City subway system.
Yeah.
You would think, and it was all Midtown, right? I'm sure she wasn't traveling up in the...
All Midtown. Well, no, she had it. She came back from Great Neck. She had taken the Long Island Railroad to Great Neck, hopped on at 34th Street, and was going up towards my apartment on 103rd.
Right,
on the one train,
right.
And it happened there. So,
Jesus Christ.
Eric Adams, keep that in mind. I just got a text from Dove Hyken. The other story that's got me really angry, besides Eric Adams, that moron, and he is what he is, and I'm not going to go back on how I felt about him for months now, is the FBI, who have come under the crosshairs of me and Bernie now for a long time. Dove Hyken just texted me because the FBI tried to make the point that this terrorist attack in Dallas a couple of days ago at that synagogue where, thank God, nobody was killed except for the perp. That's always great news, great news. They tried to make the point that it had nothing to do with Judaism. So when you've got a guy who's a terrorist who takes hostages inside a temple, how can you possibly make the point that has nothing to do with Judaism? How can you do that, Bernard?
It absolutely just floored me over the weekend watching this, watching that FBI guy, watching Joe Biden even. Joe Biden. And of course, other people. But listen to what Biden said. This is going to make you're just going to burn your ass off. I swear to God.
Burn my ass off?
This happened just after the Islamic terrorist was shot. And he was an Islamic terrorist is what he was. And he's in a synagogue. And they don't have enough information to characterize the situation for what it was. Listen to Joe Biden.
Well, no, I don't. We don't have. I don't think there is sufficient information to know about why he targeted that synagogue, why he insisted on the release of someone who's been in prison for over 10 years, why he was engaged, why he was using anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli comments. We just don't have enough facts.
Because he was a Jew-hating terrorist, you idiot. How stupid are you? How dumb are you? He's the guy who called Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist on night one.
Yep.
And we don't have enough information. The lady that they're talking about that they wanted released, that she goes by the name of Lady Al-Qaeda.
That's right. That's right.
And they knew all this. Joe Biden knew this. There was plenty of information.
Plenty. And thank God the rabbi was well-trained. A nice story about the rabbi in today's New York Post. And he actually was the one who ended the 10-hour saga. And he talked about his training and how they knew that a day like this was going to happen eventually. So thank God that was the case, because I was having dinner at the Mermaid Inn on the Upper West Side Saturday night with Danielle and Gabe. And we were saying to each other, when is our phone going to buzz? When are we going to find out that everybody there is dead? It didn't seem possible that hours later, only the bad guy would be dead and all the Jewish people would survive. It didn't seem possible, but thank God that's the way it worked out.
No, in this day and age, it didn't seem possible at all. It seemed like the opposite would happen. But I am curious. The terrorist did die.
Yeah.
How did he die? Anybody know?
I think he killed himself, but we don't know. We don't know.
Oh. And by the way, the two people that they're interrogating back in, he came here
England.
Either December 29th or January 2nd, and he's got a long criminal history and, of course, a history of affiliations with terror attacks. Who the hell approved his visa?
Well, his brother even said that. In today's New York Post, the actual cover of the paper says, blind eye, brother of synagogue terrorist asks, why was he allowed to fly? His own brother, why was he allowed to fly? And then underneath that, you have a picture of this scumbag on the subway who killed this beautiful lady, and it reads, sister of subway shover, quote, I beg for him to be taken off the street. So two guys that never should have allowed to be allowed in public and fly into all these things, that continues to be the story here in our country.
It really, absolutely sickening. That, and I could tell you one other huge, not event, it was a series of events last week. The Joe Biden presidency, I saw one a tweet, this meme, help, my presidency has fallen, and it can't get up.
Can't get up. No, we talked about that with Rich Lowry yesterday. It's over. It's already over.
It
a year in, it's over.
Over.
But the problem is there are still three more years to go. Behind him is Kamala Harris. Behind Kamala Harris is Nancy Pelosi. And while we're very excited about the Republicans taking back the House and the Senate in 2022 and Trump coming back to the White House in 2024, the bigger question is, are we going to last 3 years? That's a long time.
That is an eternity. It really is. We are in trouble is what we are. But the fact that even all the fake news, they spent a whole weekend, the fake newsers, all of them, saying that this guy, he's too old. He's done. He made all the wrong moves. He's had one disaster after another. The fake news has turned on him. So where we go from here, I just don't know.
Yeah, we played Aaron Burnett, CNN, and Chuck Todd. My boy Chuck went at Joe Biden. We played that yesterday, too. We should play it again today. Bernie's here. And you can't hear enough of that stuff. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Bo Dietl coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. He's always great. Dove Hyken will be here in the 8 o'clock hour, 840. Talking about the Dallas situation, the FBI, and what Joe Biden had to say. Lydia reports will play Beat Bernie. All the sports, another NFL playoff game last night, and the Rams are moving on to take on the one-seed Green Bay Packers. It's going to be a very exciting Tuesday because our guy, Bernard McGurk, is back. Keep it right here, Bernie and Sid, on a Tuesday.
Right now on 77 WABC, stay informed with Bernie and Sid in the morning. Then at noon, it's Charlie Kirk. And at 1:15, it's Brett Kelly on 77 WABC.
Gentlemen, there you have it. The Irish Boston theme song right now. And listen, I am back this morning. I was off last week. We talked about it a little bit earlier.
Well, you did work Monday.
I worked Monday. That's true. Yeah, thanks for reminding me. It seemed like an eternity ago, for God's sakes. I did work Monday, and a lot of stuff happened. Look, I know you're into – I actually started watching sports again.
I'm into it. I actually did something yesterday. It's funny you mentioned that. I haven't done it in a long time. I watched Carton and Roberts on CBS, Craig and Evan, because they're engaged in a conversation. If the Brooklyn Nets don't even make it to the finals or win a championship, because they've got three certain Hall of Famers, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden, maybe four with Blake Griffin, would they be the most talented New York team ever to not play for a championship? And as crazy and banal and trite as that sounds, the answer may be yes. And I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this. I just got sick of inflation and all that other stuff for about 30 minutes. It took my mind off of it, and it actually worked for me.
Well, breaking news, Kyrie Irving says in light of Kevin Durant's injury and the fact that he can't play in Brooklyn, obviously Durant can't play anywhere, Kyrie's going to get the vax.
No, he didn't say that.
He did not.
In fact, he doubled down and said, I ain't getting it.
Fake news. He said, no way. That's his problem, and I'm sticking with my situation, no vaccine.
I actually went on Friday after the show with Danielle and Gabe to CVS, and I got my booster shot and my flu shot the same day. And they were asking me all night, are you okay? Saturday morning, are you okay? And what did I do? I ran 4 miles on Saturday, and 2 hours later went to the gym and did a 90-minute chest workout. Not only was I okay, I felt great. So I'm not sure all these people are freaked out about getting these shots and the boosters. I know some people get sick. Maybe a few have died. But I got the booster and the flu the same day, and I felt great the next morning. Great.
Wow, that's good. Yeah, I felt minimal side effects from the booster, but I did feel something that night. I wouldn't say, I wouldn't say great the next morning, but in about, 24 hours, I was fine. Either way, I watched the Cowboys 49ers game yesterday. Oof. The last minute took an hour.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the stupid move on
Dallas's part
running out the clock. But the point is, I don't know, just like you, I'm back into it. It's escapism. I watched the New York Knicks last night. I watched Breen and Clyde at the Garden, a replay of the earlier game, and it just was like, it's like eating comfort food.
It takes you away. And the Knicks lost again yesterday, and they were starting to play really good basketball, and there was a tough loss at home to the Hornets. There's another Eric Adams moment for you. He's at the Knick game at Madison Square Garden. Know where you are. You're at the Knick game at Madison Square Garden. We all know the Nets are the much better team. We know that. But this city is still a Knick town. He's at the Knick game at Madison Square Garden talking about how he's a Nets fan. I know he was the Brooklyn Borough president. Maybe he is a Nets fan, but it's kind of like de Blasio. If you're at a Met game, don't be talking about the Red Sox. Does that make sense?
Makes eminent sense. Him, de Blasio, and believe it or not, Bloomberg. Both of them Boston Red Sox fans. And by the way, both of them advising Eric Adams right now, and Eric Adams welcoming their advice. I mean, okay, Bloomberg, even though he turned into a woke weasel during the presidential campaign, he did run the city fairly efficiently and safely.
His first two terms. His third term, he became an emperor.
Right. Yeah. I mean, believe me, I was not his biggest fan. But compared to taking advice from de Blasio, do you throw that on top of everything else?
I tell you, the best part of the 49er-Cowboy game, though, if you want some real hitting, some hard hitting, was after the game where the fans, literally in Dallas, outside the stadium, and it's all over the New York Post today, they've got pictures and video, the fans beat the living daylights out of each other. Did you see that?
I did.
Oh, my God. The San Francisco fans and the Dallas fans, like the days of the Giants and the Dodgers, they're always, it's not even funny because they actually put a guy in a coma a couple of years ago, but they beat the living daylights out of each other outside the stadium after the game.
Let's face it. You know the Cowboys fans, so cocky. They thought they were going to win. They're going all the way, whatever. There's no way we're going to lose. They were frustrated. They were showing people in the stands crying at the end.
It reminds me of my people, the Eagles fans, back when they were at, what was it called?
It was the Veteran
Stadium.
They had a jail downstairs. Yeah. That's how I used to work with Bernie on Imus. I used to tell Imus how many people went to jail last Sunday after the Eagles game. By the way, I did it once.
Did you really?
Eagles, Giants. I spent some time downstairs in the big house.
With a Philly cheesesteak and a Pabst Blue Ribbon. No doubt. Hey, just last thing on sports, this sports related, whatever. University of Pennsylvania, the dude that swims on the women's team and he breaks, all the records and he steals all their dreams and all that stuff because he beats them because he's a guy. I mean, come on, let's go. He says the teammate says that he's been telling them that he is the Jackie Robinson.
Oh, God.
Of swimming. He is the Jackie Robinson.
Because he broke the barrier for transgenders. By the way, he got beat by a transgender, that guy, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. But as far as the girl, biological females go, he's still cheating and stealing from them. He's Jackie Robinson. You're the Jackie Martling. You're a clown. You're a thief. You're a bum is what you are. You're just, I mean, what you're doing is just it's so immoral. I can't even. And Michael Phelps, the Olympic, many medal winning Olympic swimmer, Michael Phelps, weighed in on this. Now, this is not a difficult situation. You have people like liberals who are smart that know that this is wrong. They've said it unequivocally. Let's hear what Michael Phelps said.
I think this leads back to the organizing committees again, because it has to be a level playing field. I think that's something that we all need. Like, that's what sports are. And for me, I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know what's going to happen. I believe that we all should feel comfortable with who we are in our own skin. But I think sports should all be played at an even playing field. I don't know what that looks like in the future, but it's hard. It's very complicated, and this is my sport. This has been my sport my whole entire career. And I honestly, the one thing I would love is everybody to be able to compete on an even playing field.
Okay. What he said there was absolutely 1,000% correct, though he seems like he's pulling his punches
a
little bit.
He definitely did, yes.
And it's complicated? No, it's not. It's not complicated at all. No biological males competing against biological females. But he did say the right thing. We need level playing fields, and guys competing against girls is not a level playing field. So at least we give him some kudos for that, even though he was too diplomatic for me. But then again, most people are, generally speaking. Traffic and sports is coming up next. Right now it is time for the 77 WABC Clip of the Day. Listen to Dick Morris, this and every Sunday at noon. Here Mr. Morris talks about, Hillary Clinton.
Hillary wants to be the sole source supplier of opposition to the left of the Democratic Party. She wants to create the view that she is the only one who can stand up to the ultra-left and give the party sanity and give it a chance at victory, which is ironic given that she recently postured herself as exactly what she's now opposing, the ultimate crazy left.
This is Sid on Sports.
Oh, my goodness!
Sponsored by Peerless Boilers on 77 WABC.
NFL playoffs, Bernard's watching, and so am I. In a big game last night, the Rams, they took apart the Cardinals 34-11. Big night for Ram quarterback Matthew Stafford, over 200 yards and two touchdowns, including this one, the former Giant wideout Odell Beckham Jr.
Locked one for Odell Beckham Jr. Got it down. Touchdown.
You see Odell Beckham against Marco Wilson really just run the fade route and then go over top of him and pull it down. That's a nice job. You see Matthew Stafford here. You're seeing the end of the play and you're seeing the pinpoint throw, but he did a great job of reading Buda Baker.
Odell finally catching touchdowns in the playoffs. That was courtesy of ESPN. Your divisional round playoffs for this weekend, four games all set. Those Rams, who won last night, they'll be in Tampa Bay taking on the reigning world champ Buccaneers and Tom Brady at 3 o'clock on Sunday. The late game Sunday night at 6:30 features the Buffalo Bills in Kansas City for the Chiefs. On Saturday, your two games late Saturday afternoon, the Bengals at the one-seed Tennessee Titans, and late Saturday night, the 49ers in Green Bay for Aaron Rodgers and the one-seed Packers. The Raiders have fired their GM, Mike Mayock. NBA yesterday, both teams in action on MLK Day. The Knickerbockers lose. They've been playing well lately. They lost yesterday 97-87 to the Hornets at home. The Knicks are back to 500 at 22-22. The Nets, they took it on the chin. They lose 114-107 to the Cavaliers. The Nets fall to 27-16. They're third in the East behind the Bulls and the Heat. Here was Nets coach Steve Nash after the loss.
At the end, we didn't convert. I think we missed the layup. You know, we had a few easy opportunities to convert. We didn't convert. We let Mobley get behind us for a layup, and those were small margins in the game. But, you know, for me, giving up 65 points in the first half, we had a lot of defensive errors we weren't happy with. You know, that's the game. We got to be more consistent. We have to be more solid, and we have to put together two halves of defense.
On the ice last night, it was the Islanders. They get the win. They beat the Flyers 4-1. It's the Isles and Flyers from Philly again later on tonight. Sports brought to you by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Check them out today and every day. PeerlessBoilers.com, PavilionTankless.com. They do build America's best boilers. With sports, I'm Sid. On your Tuesday morning. So you folks, Bernie's back today, thank God. Great to have Bernard back in studio. We got Bo Dietl coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Dove Hikind in the 8 o'clock hour. So you folks know, of course, I left early yesterday, left at 9, and left this show in the hands of the very capable Curtis Sliwa.
And I headed to Summit, New Jersey to go to the funeral for dear friends Al, Danielle, and Antonio Prieto. And I told this story yesterday, Bernie, that all day Sunday I was literally sick. Sick to my stomach. I was tired. I was nauseous. I was sad. I knew that yesterday was going to be a brutal day. And it lived up to the promise. You know, it's one thing to go to a funeral and you've got one body. But when there's three bodies and one of them is 16 years old. And I've talked about this now a bunch of times the last week and a half since they were tragically killed last Saturday. I can't even begin to tell you how heartbreaking it is. So I went first to the funeral home in Summit, New Jersey. And it was just a couple of folks there, Aunt Gloria, Joseph, Iovine, my best friend, his sister was killed. His sister Elizabeth, some of his kids were there, obviously, Tina. And spent about 30 minutes there. And it was, like I said, it was very quiet. The Corseros were there, Anthony and Billy, they're listening now. And then we made our way, and Billy and Fran drove me from the funeral home, Bernie, to the chapel. And, boy, what a gorgeous service. I've been to St. Patrick's Cathedral, as you know, many times. So my sister at one point looked at me and said, how do you know all this stuff? I said, I see it on TV, you know. I was able, you know, peace be with you and with you and kissing everybody and on my knees and the whole thing.
Nice.
It was beautiful, the service. But when I got there, I had no idea. They asked me to be a pallbearer because Joseph was so broken up. He just couldn't do it. And now I go from just being really sad as a loving family, friend, member, spectator, to carrying the casket, which was just, that was too much for me to handle.
Stop. I can't, it's just,
it's terrible. And then the three caskets we bring into the church, and there were hundreds, Bernie, hundreds of people there for this, hundreds. These were three very beloved people. And everybody spoke, Danielle's sister and her nephews, and then Al's family. And then at the very end, Roberto is the surviving child. Roberto is 18. He's going to college. His brother, Antonio, 16, was killed, and his parents. And Al had a child with another lady before he married Danielle. Very impressive guy, lives on the West Coast, older guy now, very successful business guy. So the older brother, Alec, and Roberto, part of Danielle's marriage, did a skit where they went back and forth. One played the parents, and one played Roberto. And at the end of the skit, where Roberto spoke for his mom and dad and his brother, Alec goes, he's playing the part of Danielle at the very end, the mom. And he says, listen, Roberto, today's a big day for you. Get up, get dressed, I'll make you breakfast, I love you, blah, blah, blah. And at the very end of it, Roberto says, goodbye, mom. So needless to say, the skit back and forth, there was some comedic value to it because there were some jokes and all that. But once you see and hear an 18-year-old kid say goodbye, mom, and it really is goodbye, it the whole place is completely broke into tears, and it was very, very difficult. And then after that, they had the actual mass, which was lovely, and the priest did a very, very nice job. And as if that's not enough of a heartbreaking day, then we had to put the caskets back in the hearses and make our way to Woodbridge to Beth Israel Cemetery and watch them put these caskets into the wall at the mausoleum. So you had the funeral home, you had the mass, and you had the cemetery. I don't think I got home till about 5:30 last night. And I left here, of course, at 9 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, there's a lot of cliches. Bernie, you're going through a lot right now, but I'm really, really sure you're going to be okay. I really am. But when you see three caskets, basically a whole family wiped out in the prime of their lives, gorgeous, smart, beautiful. Antonio was on his way to the Olympics. He was that good a gymnast. And, in fact, his casket had the Olympic flags all over it. And at one point, the priest said in church, he said Antonio was going to go to the Olympics and would have received a lot of applause. So now he may not get the gold, you know, the gold medal, but he's certainly wearing a gold crown today on his way to see Jesus. Let's give him the amount of applause he would get if he won the gold medal. And everybody stood up with a rousing round of applause in his honor. And you hear these cliches all the time, you know, you get caught up in nonsense and angry about stuff that really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you went through what I went through yesterday, and if you're going through, Bernie, what you've gone through, the courageous warrior that you are the last couple of weeks, if you can't come to the real reality that life is precious and life is short, and in a second it could be all over. I don't know what else. I don't know what's going to wake you up. I don't know what else is going to wake you up. I really don't.
No, it is all about perspective, and events have a way of forcing the reality, the real perspective on you, because you lose track. You get caught up in this, that, the other.
You do,
as you say. You start taking advantage of certain things. You take them for granted, I should say. And until some fateful day arrives and slaps you back into reality, you can't take anything for granted.
Nothing. No, you can't. And
the emotional toll, I can't even imagine. Physically, yes, a long day for you, but the emotional toll.
Yeah.
Well, you and everybody there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, really, Joseph, who most of his life was this, you know, he was John Travolta. And he's aged, I don't know how many years. He had COVID. He wasn't feeling well. And then he went from that to this. And he was very, very close with Danielle. And he couldn't breathe yesterday. He felt, that's why I actually jumped in to be a pallbearer, because he just couldn't do it. But he was, you know, it was rough. It was, you know, and Gloria, God bless her, was able to maintain herself throughout the whole day. And so did Elizabeth, one of the other sisters. But it was just terrible. It was just terrible. You know, it took a long time because, again, there were three bodies, not one.
Just absolutely unthinkable. I mean, really. Just the whole situation.
Unbelievable.
Just un-freaking thing. A beautiful, young family
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Just wiped out.
Wiped out. The truck makes one bad move, and I don't know if Al was doing 70, 75, but he was on a highway in Florida in a brand-new Volvo. And the truck makes one move, and like you said, a family of four, three of them are gone today, so... I know a lot of the folks that were there yesterday. I can't tell you how many people walked up to me, and it made me feel a little uncomfortable, to be honest, and thanked us, you and I, Bernie. We listen to you every morning. We listen to you every morning. We love you. Thank you. And a lot of those folks are listening right now, a lot of them. And I just want to pass on our condolences again from me and Danielle and my family and me and Bernard and this radio family that you listen to every day, and just tell you that we love you, and the Prieto family, the Iovine family, we're thinking about you. Really are. And this ain't going to go away for a long time. Not for a long, long time. But at the very least, what it did for me was, and not to get too emotional and too Channel 7 family drama on you, I can tell you when I walked inside my house last night, I gave Danielle, Ava, and Gabe a hug like I haven't given them in years. Because at one point, the gym team, the gymnast, he was a great gymnast, his whole gymnast team walked up to the front of the church. And every one of those kids reminded me of my son.
Right.
They were somewhere between 12 and 16. Gaby's 13. They even looked like him. And I couldn't imagine sitting there as a parent or a grandparent burying Antonio like I did yesterday. So you can't help it, but you know, you make yourself part of it.
Of course, of course.
Right, of course.
It's the way it is.
So I walked in my house last night, Bernie, I couldn't hug him tighter. I couldn't hug him tighter. Just like I hugged you this morning. And at the very least, that's what you take from a tragedy like this, right?
At the very least, yes. You know, you have your own family, and onward and forward, if there's any sort of silver lining, I hate to even, you know, portray it in terms of that, it is... It makes you closer with your own family and more appreciative, and gives you a much better, as we mentioned before, perspective on things.
It does. And that's the real perception. Not the crime on the subway, Eric Adams. That's reality. But in this case, to Bernie's point, a brilliant point, as usual, perception does matter. So one more time, the Prietos and the Iovines, we love you. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Bo Dietl will be here at 7:40. Dove Hikind at 8:40. Lydia Reports comes your way at 8:25. Beat Bernie comes your way at 9:40. It's a great show today. Keep it right here. Bernie and Sid on a Tuesday.
Stay entertained and informed now with Bernie and Sid in the Morning. Then tonight, it's The Great One. Mark Levin at 6.
This is The Great Scandal.
On 77 WABC.
Rush Hour Week, this week, I guess it starts and it goes through February in New York. I think about 450 restaurants are going to take part in this. And that's nice. I don't know what you get. I don't know what they do. I think we're like most other families in that we tend to go to pretty much the same places a lot. We try to switch it up on Saturday nights. We do try to go someplace. Not we. It's really my wife. She makes all the reservations. But she tries to do something different on Saturday nights. Rest of the week, we try to keep it as close to home as possible because everybody's tired. Everybody's always tired, you know. The weather's cold. We're working long hours. Nobody feels that great. Everybody's got something going on. Everybody's tired, right, Bern?
It's January, and I've characterized January as a month of Mondays. I mean, every freaking day is a depressing Monday in January. It doesn't, you know, maybe with the exception of Friday.
But, right.
Yeah, everybody's tired. They're depressed. It's just brutal. Let's get on with this. Let's move on to month number two, Black History Month. Let's go there.
You say Black History Month. I'm glad you brought that up. So yesterday was Martin Luther King Jr., you know. And by the way, the ratings suck every year on that day at this station. Next year I'm taking off. The last 2 years in a row, nobody listens. Everybody's off and nobody listens. I noticed that the last 2 years. But what I did notice also was this compulsion for people to put something on their Instagram account, a picture of MLK, part of the speech, the virtue signaling that goes on. I don't do that. I didn't put a picture up of anybody from the funeral yesterday. I just don't do that type of stuff. But just these everyday people that I know them personally, that they couldn't give a rat's ass about MLK or about the day or any of that, but they're compelled to put a picture up on Instagram, MLK, I had a dream. It's so phony. Those two words you always use, virtue signaling. Stop. Just stop.
It's true. It's true.
You're not fooling anybody.
It's patronizing. It's transparent what you're trying to do. You know, you're pandering. But,
reality TV stars, Martin Luther King. Are you serious?
I will
Cut
say,
it out.
I'll say this. It beats putting up a BLM poster.
But they do that too.
I know. That's wrong. But at least Martin Luther King was on the pretty much. He was on the right side of things.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, equity versus equality. That's a huge difference.
Well, it's funny. I had the Reverend A.R. Bernard on yesterday, and it got very contentious. You would have loved it. I mean, I got contentious. I went back and forth with him, and he kept using the term equity instead of equality. We had a couple of guys call in and say, Sid, you did notice. Now, I didn't take him to task for that, although he did say it three or four times. But even A.R. Bernard yesterday used that term equity over equality, which is wrong when you describe Martin Luther King Jr.
It's communism. It's flat out communism is what it is. Equity is the equality of results. Equality of opportunity is what we strive for.
Right.
It's not that everybody gets the same thing in the end. You have the opportunity to work for the same thing in the very end.
Yeah.
But not the result. It's not the equality of result. That's what equity is. That's communism. That's socialism. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen. Martin Luther King was not for that.
All right, 7 o'clock hour coming up next. We'll get our morning message at 7:25 from Bill O'Reilly. Then the very entertaining, thought-provoking, and great Bo Deedle coming up at 7:40. Bernie's back Tuesday morning with Bernie and Sid. Hour number two coming right at you.
We are New York. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Talk Radio 77. WABC.
Where you going, bro?
I'm going up the country. Baby, don't you wanna go?
Better get some testosterone.
I'm going up the country. Baby, don't you
like Rita Cosby,
go?
Right?
Nah, you sound great, bro. You sound great.
No, I'm talking about canned heat.
Oh, canned
heat. And it would apply to me as well.
You sound great.
The point I made last week. So go, bro. Go to the country. I'm staying here in the city for a while. This is like a Friday in July type of song, right?
It is. Roll your windows down, hit the New York State Thruway, and then get me to the Quickway. And, yes, make my way to exit 104 in Monticello. smoke a lot of weed, and listen to the whole album of Woodstock. And wake me up when it's Monday morning. Time to go back to work.
That's right. So a lot of news, Sydney. We covered a lot of it, of course, this morning. And we'll continue to do so. Believe it or not, the Olympics, the Chinese Olympics, start in about 3 weeks.
Yes, I had that discussion with Danielle last night. She was asking me why we're going. And I said, well, do you really want to punish the kids? You know, we just buried Antonio today, and he had dreams of going to the Olympics. That's all he cared about outside of his family. So you want to punish these kids who worked their whole lives to get to this point because Joe Biden's a moron or because the Chinese want to kill us? And she said, yes. She said, I don't want to punish the kids necessarily, but what kind of message is that? We're going to actually spend money, and China's going to make money. So we disagreed there. I believe that as much as I know China is out to destroy us and the world, that we should compete, but lots of folks don't. What do you think?
It's not only, the genocide against the Uyghurs and all that stuff, which I have a clip that's going to blow your mind coming up here in a second, but it's also the origins of the virus. I mean, this was a war crime.
Yes.
On a parallel, towards any 20th century war crime, what they did. They killed millions and millions of people. I don't care whether or not they did it intentionally, if it started in the lab intentionally or not, which I tend to believe it did. But once they knew it was there, they sent it out to the world. They blocked off the interior of China, and they sent those flights out to the world. And that's how this all got started.
There's no doubt.
Three years later.
You're right. The virus, the Uyghurs. But, you know, there's plenty of reasons not to compete. I just don't want to. I don't want to punish the kids. That's all.
And I appreciate that as well. So it's a tough call. Even President Trump said he didn't want to, he didn't want to punish the kids. By the way, he gave a great speech Saturday night.
He did. It was a great speech. Only on Newsmax. And his speech.
Look at
his speech on Saturday compared to Joe Biden last week on Wednesday. And you tell me who's more prepared to run this country.
And we'll get to that in a second. But first, back to the Uyghurs in China. This part owner of the Golden State Warriors. He's got a name that I cannot pronounce. Very Indian name. Yeah. Listen to what he said. I mean, he was doing a podcast, and the host brought up, how can you deal with China with the Uyghurs and all that stuff? And listen to what he said.
Yeah, nobody cares about what's happening to the Uyghurs, okay? You bring it up because you really care, and I think
what
that's nice that you
cares?
Care. The rest of us don't care. I'm just telling you a very hard... I'm telling you a very hard, ugly truth, okay? Of all the things that I care about, yes, it is below my line.
That is absolutely hilarious.
He's being honest, though. Let's be. I mean, how many folks in America wake up and actually start thinking about the Uyghurs?
No, you're right. He's right, and it's sad, but it's true. People just don't. They really don't. But here's the thing: it isn't the Uyghurs. It is the hypocrisy. That's what it's all about. It's the hypocrisy. You can't complain about, stuff in your country when you're doing business with a country that actually kills people, that throws them to concentration camps, kills them, forces them not to have kids, stuff like that. So really, it's about the hypocrisy. But his brutal honesty it just made me laugh.
I wonder what it was like when he got back to the Golden State Warrior complex, because for folks that don't follow the NBA closely, there are two or three coaches that are more woke than maybe any lefty politician. One was Stan Van Gundy. I'm not sure he's still working. One is the coach out in San Antonio. And the other is Steve Kerr with the Golden State Warriors. Yeah. He is as woke as it gets. So when he hears one of his co-owners say, who cares about the Uyghurs, that must have made for a nice afternoon lunch back at the Golden State complex.
The Warriors put out a statement saying that we don't agree with everything our part owner says. That's all they said, though. They didn't go any further than that. Nothing about the Uyghurs, nothing about we condemn the Chinese and what they do to the Uyghurs, none of that stuff. So they're still being a bunch of cowards and weasels as well. Listen, Joe Biden last week effectively ended, not necessarily literally his president, but figuratively his presidency. I mentioned it earlier. I saw it on Twitter, this meme, "Help, my presidency has fallen and it can't get up."
I actually asked Rich Lowry yesterday, practically, give me two or three things Joe Biden can do to reverse that statement. Practically. Not what he can say. Who cares what he says? What could he do? And, Justin, do you remember what Rich Lowry said exactly Biden can do to maybe reverse that statement, which seems to be the truth.
Which statement? The can't get up statement?
Can't get up. Yeah. But he said, listen, I said, give me some things you can practically do that could maybe help him get up and reverse some of that. And he gave us two or three things. You remember what? Oh, one was fire Anthony Fauci.
Hey, by the way, yeah, that's a great another point. Where the hell are all of his cabinet-appointed people on the Sunday shows? Where's Sneaky Pete on the supply chain crisis? Where's the Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm on the heating prices? And everybody's homes are up 50% to 60%.
Yep.
They're nowhere to be found. None of these people. Alejandro Mayorkas, where the hell was he yesterday over the weekend on this terrorist attack down in Texas?
Nowhere.
Where are any of these people that were appointed by Joe? But they're nowhere. Everybody is in hiding.
They're running for the hills. Yeah, I think the three things he said was fire Anthony Fauci, act like you care about inflation, spend a lot of time talking about inflation.
But you can't, if you're going to push Bill Back Broke, you can't. The two are incompatible.
But that bill's dead. Now we're talking about the voting rights bill. Right now,
which is
a bunch of nonsense.
Which was the speech that effectively ended figuratively.
Yes.
His presidency.
It's true.
Because what he said during that speech was he said that if you disagree with me on this ending the filibuster so we can get this voting rights, which is essentially an easier to cheat voting bill, you're a bigot. That's what he said. And he was talking to Kyrsten Sinema. This woman's a bisexual, liberal. And he was talking to people like that.
And Joe Manchin, I'm sure.
And Joe Manchin, of course. And the people who are hiding behind Kyrsten Sinema's skirt. And
what?
Joe Manchin's.
Like, literally?
Well, there are a lot of Democrats.
She tried to go to the bathroom that day.
Right. There are a lot of Democrats that do not agree with ending the filibuster, including, by the way, Joe Biden. Listen to Joe Biden back in 05 and 07 when the Republicans had power on ending the filibuster. He was a Democrat. And, the Republicans, of course, were using the filibuster back then. But he said, no, we can't end it because it's an important tool. You know, it's an important constitutional tool. Listen to this.
And we should make no mistake. This nuclear option is ultimately an example of the arrogance of power.
We have to make that call on the fly. Ending the filibuster is a very dangerous thing to do because it's been used by progressives our whole time to make sure that we did not get rolled over.
So there you go. He was very vociferous in certain speeches. That was a small example of it right there. But the way he compared, people who opposed ending the filibuster, he compared them to Bull Connor, Jefferson Davis, George Wallace, et cetera, et cetera. It was really, really so divisive. The race baiting was off the charts. A lot of people said, like Mitch McConnell said, that's not the Joe Biden that I remember back. Hey, Joe Biden said when Mitt Romney was running for president, if you elect Mitt Romney, they're going to put y'all back in chains. So he has a history of this type of race baiting.
By the way, Mitt Romney still supported Joe Biden after all of that. And finally, last week, Mitt Romney said, and I quote, he has disappointed me.
Well, it is what he said on Sunday. Maybe you're paraphrasing from what he said on Sunday. Play that clip, Justin, please.
He's got to recognize that when he was elected, people were not looking for him to transform America. They were looking to get back to normal, to stop the crazy. And it seems like we're continuing to see the kinds of policy and promotions that are not accepted by the American people. Look, James Carville just said that, he's had a bad week, but not a bad year. No, as a matter of fact, he's had a bad year. He's had 52 weeks of bad weeks.
52 weeks of bad weeks. Mitt Romney on the money right there.
See, I got to give him some. So you thought that Mitt Romney was a jerk-off. There's no question he is. But you thought he was just being difficult on Donald Trump because he hated Trump. And that still may be the case. But at least now he's come back and bashed the other guy, too. Because there's a lot of people out there that still refuse to bash Biden because they hate Trump. At least Romney showed us he can bash both guys.
Well, as I just mentioned, he essentially accused Mitt Romney of being a racist back in 2012.
Right.
You elect Mitt Romney, they're going to put you all back in chains.
But he still supported him. I mean, look, Biden, Kamala Harris flat out said he was a racist and still kisses him on stage in front of millions of Americans. We know why. She's full of it, but she still does that. So it's nice to hear Romney at least.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, the sentiment is universal, left, right. I could play clips. I don't have time right now from MSNBC, CNN, Don Lemon, Donnie Deutsch over the weekend, all of them saying it's over for Joe Biden. Even Dick Durbin, the liberal guy from Illinois senator. Al Sharpton said he went too far during that speech in Georgia last week about the filibuster and Bull Connor and Jefferson Davis. And by the way, when he went down to Georgia last week, you probably know this, he gave this filibuster voting rights speech, which, again, is an easier-to-cheat voting rights bill. It would federalize and normalize the 2020 elections, make that normal forever, and these guys will cheat in perpetuity. But the one person who made voter fraud her big issue, she didn't even show up at his – he gave this speech in Georgia. She snubbed him. She didn't show up. Stacey Abrams.
She never showed.
She blew him off.
Yep.
She blew Sleepy Joe off during that speech because he is now toxic. Everybody knows that. So anyway, yeah, you had Dick Durbin and those guys. But also back to the FBI thing. This is a real disgusting. We'll talk about this with Dove Hyken next hour. But the fact that the FBI actually couldn't call a situation for what it was obvious to everybody. Everybody screaming at their TV. This is an anti-Semitic terrorist operation that we're witnessing right now.
Although somebody sent me a private message on Instagram this morning, and they were like, hey, Sid, stop it already with the Jewish stuff, okay? Clearly that guy was after the Norwegians inside the temple that day.
That's funny.
But, yeah, I mean, but, yeah, clearly the FBI once again, fumbling the football. Now, it was all about the Jews.
This is at the direction of Joe Biden's Justice Department. This is the Merrick Garland and the wokesters in the Justice Department. They're all over the administration, all these people. And they're like, no, take it easy on the tell this FBI spokesperson, take it easy on the Muslims. Anyway, listen to the FBI guy in the middle of the crisis. Listen to him.
We do believe from our engagement with this subject that he was singularly focused on one issue, and it was not specifically related to the Jewish community. But we're continuing to work to find motive. And we will continue on that path.
What?
Well, listen, the whole operation was about getting that lady released. So he's right in that respect. But he could have picked any store, any place to do it. He clearly picked that place to do it because if, in fact, he had to kill somebody, he wanted to kill Jews.
Of course. Absolutely.
But where the guy was right was he was there to get that person released. But it wasn't as singular as that, you dummy.
And speaking of dummies, Joe Biden parroted the same line that came from his Justice Department. Listen to him.
I did not walk.
Do you know why he targeted that specific synagogue?
Well, no, I don't. We don't have. I don't think there is sufficient information to know about why he targeted that synagogue, why he insisted on the release of someone who's been in prison for over 10 years, why he was engaged, why he was using anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli comments. We just don't have enough facts.
Are you stupid, bro?
He did at least mention anti-Semitic. He went further than the FBI.
We don't know why he did it.
Yeah,
it's because he is a Muslim terrorist.
Right. Really, that's
Joe
simple.
Biden is a dummy.
No?
Yeah. Joe Biden. The lady that we're talking about, she's doing like 85 years for terrorist activity. Her nickname is Lady Al-Qaeda.
That's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know, which I'm sure Ilhan Omar is saying. Wait, I thought that was my nickname. But I swear to God. And these idiots are, they're like, well, we don't know. We don't know what he's doing. I mean, in fact, in some of the local newscasts that I watched, they never even mentioned the fact that he was a Muslim from Britain. They never mentioned it.
What did they say he was?
They just said there was a man holding some people hostage in a synagogue. And he wanted some convict released. Didn't mention that she was Lady Al-Qaeda, because they were parroting the same line. Fake local news. It trickles down from the top, from the administration to the mainstream media fake news to the local news here, Channel 5, Channel 7, Channel 12 on Long Island, et cetera, et cetera.
To the morons that go vote.
It makes me sick to my stomach.
As it should. The morning message from Bill O'Reilly is coming up next, and then we'll talk to Bo Deedle. And Bo's so good on Tuesdays, man. He's probably pissed off at like three or four different things today. He's got a lot to be pissed off about. But the question is, when will Bo Deedle finally admit that Eric Adams is a phony? I don't know. I talked to him yesterday, and he told me. I don't care what he told you. I don't care anymore. Stop. I don't care whether you had dinner at Rayo's last night, whether you went to some burlesque show. I don't care. When is Bo Dietl going to finally admit that Eric Adams sold him a bag of goods and he sold the rest of the city, which at the end of the day is one big heavy bag of duty?
It sounds like you're laying down a gauntlet.
I am laying down the gauntlet.
Bo.
I love Bo. I love Bo as much as anybody. That's a great man. You know how much I love him. But it's an uproar with the Eric Adams nonsense. Stop. I talked to Eric yesterday, and I think he's going to shut up. He's not going to do anything.
Wait. He's a moron.
Right. Well, you said that about de Blasio. What about this idiot? It's a perception? The lady's not. Rigor mortis hasn't even set in yet for this Asian lady, this beautiful lady. That's a perception?
Well, I think Bo would agree that that was one of the dumbest comments.
But how many I know, but we've got like three or four different things now. At what point do you say, okay?
Okay. All right. Well, I look forward to the interview.
What do you think he's going to say?
Nice setup.
You think so?
I think it was very good.
All right.
Now we have Sid versus Bo.
I'm not going to win that. That I know. But we are going to have that coming up after Bill O'Reilly. Bernie and Sid, keep it right here.
Bill O'Reilly here, and I'm warming up from the NRIA.net studios in New York. Stand by for the O'Reilly Update Morning Edition. On this Tuesday, the giant moving company, United Van Lines, reports that customers are fleeing five states most of all. Can you guess which ones? Hint, all are run by progressives. And here they are. Connecticut. Now, Connecticut is dependent on New York City for its economic well-being. The rest of the state is fairly rural. Hartford is the capital, and Hartford is a disaster. The taxation in Connecticut is very high for workers. And the benefits for those workers, because they get double hammered going into New York City, are few. Illinois, a disaster almost everywhere. You know about violence in Chicago. You know about J.B. Pritzker, the worst governor in the country. You know about high taxation and strangulation by regulation. That rhymes. So people are bailing out of Illinois. New York, a catastrophe in New York City. Crime is insane there. Taxes, the highest in the union. People in New York are going to Florida, big time. California, same thing. San Francisco is unlivable. Crime surging. Taxation out of control. And the state that most people are fleeing, New Jersey. Again, dependent on New York with all the social problems. Now this. That is the Morning O'Reilly Update. More analysis later on.
Right now on 77 WABC, stay informed with Bernie and Sid in the morning. At 5, it's Cats at Night with John Katzenmatidis on 77 WABC.
Take my photo off the wall if it just won't sing for you. All that's left is gone away, and there's nothing there for you to prove.
7:29 on your Tuesday. Bo Dietl in studio. He's coming up in a couple of minutes after sports and traffic and whatever else is coming up.
The clip of the day.
All right, calm down. I did tell you that last Friday I got my booster shot and my flu shot the same day. And I had zero issues. I was able to run 4 miles, work out the next day to two different classes, my high-impact treadmill class at Mile High with my trainer, Ned Trim. And then I went to the gym and lifted weights afterwards. I felt great. But one of Bernie's favorite guys, I like this guy. Bernie likes him more than I do. He said some things in the past that were flat-out racist. I still like him. Bernie loves him. Stephen A. Smith. Turns out that the $10 million man, Stephen A. Smith, he got the COVID, and he, like, almost died. I don't know. Here was Stephen A. yesterday talking about how serious it got for him.
I had 103-degree fever every night. Woke up with chills and pool of sweat. Headaches were massive. Coughing profusely. And it got to a point that right before New Year's Eve, I was in a hospital New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. That's how I brought in the new year. And they told me, had I not been vaccinated, I wouldn't be here. That's how bad I was.
There you go. If he was not vaccinated, Stephen A. Smith, he would have died. The endorsement for the vaccinated.
Wow. Well, yeah, pretty much that's been the conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
That the vaccines mitigate the effects of the virus, and that's why you should get them, even though they don't prevent you from catching it.
That's right.
Which is what they told you 6 months ago.
They did tell you that initially, and I did get the Delta after I got the vaccinations, and I felt really crappy on a Thursday during the summer in August. It was 102 degrees. You remember that day? I had that celebrity softball game in Brooklyn.
Oh, yes.
And I was standing in center field freezing. I had the chills, and I said, wait a second. It's 102 degrees. That was a legitimate temperature. I probably shouldn't be cold right now. What's going on? And yeah. For about 2 days, I felt like crap, but I was okay because I did get vaccinated before. So,
well, I'm glad for you. Glad for Stephen A. I like Stephen A. I don't know about the racist stuff he said in the past, but
we played a bunch of it here on this show, and you're like, oh, all right, I still like him.
At least he wasn't stuck in traffic.
And he fired Max Kellerman, of course, you know that.
He got rid of Kellerman, who was just the biggest coward, weasel, panderer you could ever imagine.
You know he has his own show, though. When I go work out in the afternoons, Kellerman's got his own show.
He ain't hurting.
Horrible.
No, he ain't hurting.
He ain't hurting. No, no, not at all. Sadly.
Touch me in the pouring rain, and the moment that you wander far from me, I want to see you in my arms again.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, ladies and gentlemen. Heard everywhere on that 77 WABC app. Simulcast out on Eastern Long Island, News Talk 107.1 FM. If you want to watch us on your smart TVs, on your computers, it is WABCRadio.tv. And speaking of love, is I can say that, and it's no blow. You're not allowed to say it anymore, right? There used to be a phrase called no homo. You can't say that anymore.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, well, anyway, there's a man that I happen to love dearly, and his name is Bo Dietl. And he's a hero cop, a great actor. He's been a loyal friend for many, many years, and he's done he saved me on several different occasions, and I love this man as much as I can love anybody, and here he is in studio, the great former NYPD cop, Bo Dietl. Good morning, Bo.
Good morning, and I'm here in studio to say hello to you and tell you you're going to be better, and
My prayers, man.
And everybody's prayers, that's it, and I want you to be the tough guy that I know. If I got to fight this other guy over here, because I heard him talking down to me, I'll fight him for you, okay? I may be a little older than him, he might be pumping all that iron, but you know what it is? Ballsitation. You got to have the ballsitation.
That's right.
Otherwise, all those muscles don't mean nothing. And I think you proved it when you knocked him on his butt at the pier.
Will you stop? That was 19 years ago.
I still put my money on.
He's a tough guy. He's a tough guy. And yeah. I would, even now, as sick as he is, he'd probably kick my ass. He certainly would. But I was getting on you because you're friends with Eric Adams. You have time and time again on this show said, listen, I spoke to Eric. He understands. And I've got four different occasions, four in the last week and a half, where he doesn't understand anything. So tell me why I should continue to believe this guy's good. And I don't want to hear he's better than de Blasio. So what? He's going to save this city?
Okay, listen to me. I am not going to eat. What do you call that? Eat when you have
crow.
To eat some crow.
Eat crow.
I'm not going to eat crow. I'm not going to eat no birds.
Not
I'm not going to do nothing.
You
like
will
that.
Eventually.
All I can say is this. You are starting to sound like things are not happening properly. But remember, how long has he been in office? 2 weeks?
3 weeks. Crime is up, by the way.
3 weeks. He's been in office 3 weeks. Hopefully, because, you know, I've been running a business for 38 years. It's all about using resources. And the reality is, what's out in the subways, and I gotta tell you right now, there's a way of combating this, and they have to use all efforts to combat it. One, we have the mental illness. That idiot that threw that poor lady in front of the train. This guy is a psychopath. We're worrying about, there was incidents that happened. People hired me. A homeless guy had 15 foot of garbage by 15 wide, all garbage, urine and pails and everything. And the police could not remove him. The police could not do anything because they have rights. And the garbage that he had out front, garbage, urine in bags, you couldn't bring sanitation to remove it. These are the stupid laws with this stupid city council. And in reality, we have to now come before this city council, and this mayor has to get strong with the mentally ill, because a lot of this crime, it really are mentally ill people. There's two aspects of crime. You got the little punks, these little gang members, about 3,000-4,000. We round them up, you'll see the shootings go away. Then we got to deal with the mental illness like we were supposed to when you had Charlene, whatever hell her name was. She spent $1 billion mm-hmm. and did nothing. But we got to get bills passed in the city council. When someone is mentally ill, hey, you want to know something? You've got to go over their rights and protect them. And they're mentally ill. You got to protect them. You got to be able to pick them up. Right now, the cops cannot deal with mentally ill. One, take the garbage away. Two is they can't do anything until they commit a crime. And if you're going to incarcerate someone who commits a crime and they're mentally ill, you're doing nothing. Until we deal with this, this is the biggest problem of all your crime on the subways are mentally ill. I'll say it right now, 85%. I have a friend's daughter's going to be an intern, and I believe she's going to be an intern over here. And I told her, please, do not let her take a subway. Take an Uber. And I'm saying right now, and if Eric's listening to me, we've got a real problem. And it's not, what's that word he used? Precipitation?
Perception.
That
perception.
Thing, too. Yeah. So all I can say is not perception, because the reality is these mentally ill people are on all the subways, and they're converting that into crime. And for some reason, we haven't dealt with the real problem of mental illness. And if we have to forcefully take them off the street, that's what has to be done to protect them.
Well, listen,
where the hell are the rights of the people?
What you just said is 1,000% true. It's accurate. It's brilliant. It's all true. All I'm saying is, if Bill de Blasio, the day after some Asian lady was pushed on the train and murdered, said what Eric Adams said, you would have come in this morning and been like, did you hear that, moron? But for some reason, because Eric Adams is the new boy and the new guy in town, you're kind of giving him the benefit and saying, well, the bigger problem is this. I understand what the bigger problem is, but he needs to be pissed off. Not say that us New Yorkers, we're not getting it.
Good. I run a business. I hate politics. I ran for the stupid mayor when they reelected the idiot de Blasio. My point is this. There are solutions, but the only way that you can use solutions is you have to be proactive with the mentally ill. That will end 80% of your crime on the subway. Then we go after the gang members, and that's going to be another big percentage. Get the gun-carrying punks off the street, and let's stop the bullcrap. Look, I have a very successful business. I've been in business 38 years. I really don't want to go back into city politics. But I'm telling you, there's a little voice. If Eric wants to listen to me, I don't care about all these other people. I think there's an answer to this, and the answer has to come through this city council to realize what mental illness is, to realize what these gangbangers are all about carrying guns. Let's get to the root of the problem, and let's cure it. That's very simple.
And let's not stop, with this this compassionate type of sentiment when we're talking about violent mentally ill.
Yes.
We have to prioritize the rights of hardworking, innocent victims like this 40-year-old Asian woman
poor lady.
Over the rights of we have to treat the mentally ill. No, this guy was beyond the point of any return. What he should be euthanized, this person. What he did to that woman, he's gone. He's dead. So what you're saying, Bo Dietl, is that we have to institutionalize these homeless people.
That's absolutely. And let's stop covering it and all that. Like I said, people living on Fifth Avenue called me up with this homeless guy. We couldn't do anything. Garbage. We couldn't remove it. It's his property. Well, what about the people that are living their pain and they're being threatened by this guy? He had a knife or something. And we went over there. What we did was we went over there about 6 in the morning. He was sleeping across the street. I got a U-Haul truck. I took all the crap out of it. Oh, I committed a crime, I think, by taking his property. And I Metro to the dumps. My point is, we're protecting the mentally ill, but we're not protecting the people. Your people that are traveling on our subways, crime is down because no one's on a damn train.
Right, right.
No one's right, nobody's on
true.
The train.
And it's still not down. I got to tell you something else. Not violent. No, nobody dies. But, and this is another reason why I'm getting out of the city. I can't walk two blocks, and I live in a very nice area, Upper West Side, Bo and Bernie. I can't walk two blocks without having dog crap splattered all over the sidewalk. I don't understand.
Don't even go with dog. Don't even go with the dogs.
No, I'm being serious. It's
dog
disgusting.
Lovers are gonna
hate me. I love dogs too. But
You like the dog licking your face?
No.
You ever see what a dog licks? And then these people.
It's disgusting.
Let the dog stay in a friggin' zoo. Don't be crapping all over my streets. You want to see a dog? Go to the zoo. Leave me alone with these dogs.
Or at least if you're gonna have a dog, live in suburbia. You can't be walking a dog in the streets of New York City. It makes all over the place.
Margot gets mad at me because she has a big dog, and the thing comes and starts licking me. I said, keep the damn thing away from me. He was just licking the butt of another dog, and now you want to lick me?
Or he's got his nose in your crotch, and the owner's telling you, oh, don't worry, he's a friendly dog.
Yeah.
Well, get his damn nose out of my crotch.
All I say to people is, just watch what a dog does. Look. And then they go where another dog makes poo-poo, and they're licking, and you kiss them. You kiss them on the mouth. You got a dog?
No, it died. No, my dog died.
Well,
I had dogs.
Dogs are nice. Here, I'm going to get some outrage. Dogs are nice.
I love dogs.
They should be in the zoo. You want to go see an animal? Go to the zoo.
No,
leave
just
me alone.
Go to suburbia.
Keep me away from them. I don't want a dog. Guy tells me, Bo, I want to stay at your house in the Hamptons. I got two dogs. I said, do me a favor. You go put them in a kennel, put them somewhere. You're not coming into my house with two freaking dogs.
No way.
Oak floor, scratching them up, poo-pooing, pee-peeing on my floors. You're not coming to my house. Right. Go somewhere else. Leave your dogs in a zoo.
Listen, I get my elevator in my building. The elevator smells like dog. Now, look, there are dog parks, Central Park. If you take your dog out there, that's great. But you know how many people live in the city where the poor dog sits in the apartment all day long? He gets walked two or three times a day, and then they crap all over the street.
Or cats. How about being in a small apartment with like 20 cats? What could that smell like?
And
small apartment, 20 cats.
It ain't pleasant for the cats and dogs themselves.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just horrible.
All I know is to go back to the initial thing. Eric Adams, if you're listening, we've got it all out. And I tell you the honest truth, I would think about designing a master plan. And I'll go before city council and I'll testify because nobody has gone through what I did in the 70s and 80s. Well, there's a lot of guys that did it. But I mean, what we remember what was happening there. There is a way to combat this crime problem, and you have to deal with the real problems. Like I said, it's a two-ditch effort. It's the mentally ill, dealing with them, taking them off the street, if need be, forcibly. That's what it has to be. Number two is the gangbangers out there with all the shootings and all the guns. We got to get, there's about 3,000-4,000 of them. You take them off the street, you won't have any more shootings. These are the things we have to do. Let's stop worrying about the mentally ill's rights. Let's start worrying about the people like that poor Asian woman that was minding her own business and gets pushed in front of a train.
That's your perception.
40 years old.
That's your perception.
It just kills me.
It didn't happen.
And we're worrying about the mentally ill. And you want to know something? This guy doesn't even know where he is.
By the way, same with the they're going to hold a wake today for the girl who worked in Burger King.
Oh, my God.
The Latino girl.
That's where I went last week. I told you. I went up there to get Kentucky Fried Chicken last week.
You told me, but he was out.
Bernie, you were out, so I took a drive. That's my old stomping grounds, the 2-5 up there. And I went by there. There was a lot of people there. And then I went to Kentucky Fried Chicken, 106th Street, 2nd Avenue. I went out there. There was a couple of gang guys outside. They're looking at me. I pull up there with my Mercedes. They're looking at me, clocking my watch and everything. I walked out. I put my gun in my coat. I thought I was going to have to take my gun out to get back to my car. Kentucky Fried Chicken was going to cost me a little bit of...
But by the way, how do you expect Mr. Adams and his police force to arrest these gang members if, in fact, as far as I know, he hasn't taken it back, he endorses a DA named Alvin Bragg that won't keep these guys in jail unless they shoot somebody? Has he taken that back yet, Eric Adams?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I said it, and I'll say it to him again. This could be his Waterloo. If he doesn't deal with this friggin' Bragg guy and deal with him and say, look, not in my city, it ain't going to happen. We have a real problem with crime. People are fearful. People are moving out. Then when I hear on the report this morning about the billionaires. In the last 2 years, all these multi-billionaires, went from $700 billion to $1.5 trillion. They doubled their value. You know what? I'm for a billionaire tax. They should pay 80% of their profits. This is too much. Oh, I might become a socialist. I might become a left winger.
Katz Matidis is a billionaire. Quiet.
Oh, well,
you're on his station.
Anyway.
Yeah, we can make exceptions.
I'm talking about the super billionaires, all right? You work more than $10 billion, then you pay taxes.
You pay your damn taxes, right? No, that is gross itself. Yeah, Eric Adams, he's got a lot to amend for right now. I mean, he's not off to a great start.
All I know is he's got a lot of issues, and I think the most number one issue is the crime problem, and with that comes part and parcel with the mentally ill, and we got to deal with the mental ill problem. And, you know, we have places all over. You know, we worry about housing for homeless. Let's worry about the majority. There's a lot of people who are homeless. Probably 70% of the homeless are mentally ill. And we got to help them. We have to have places for them to go. But by staying on the subway and sleeping on the subway and then all of a sudden attacking people, it's not going right.
Desperate times calls for desperate measures. We need that right now to protect the innocent, like that 40-year-old Asian lady.
And you know what? People are moving out. Everybody I talked to, including Sid, wants to move out.
Yeah, I'm out.
I mean, in reality, people are moving out of this great city. We have to save this city. And if Eric wants to listen to me, Eric Adams, our mayor, if he wants to listen, I got a great plan. And I'll testify before city council, not as a cop, but as a New York City businessman, 38 years, what's going on? Everyone's bailing out, and that's the way it is. And you can't deal with homeless, have rights. But where are the rights of that beautiful Asian woman that got pushed in front of that train? Where is her rights?
That's a great question. Well said, Bo Dietl. Yeah, hopefully Eric Adams takes him up on it and puts him on some, I don't know, some committee, does something. Take Bo Dietl, take this guy who knows more about the city than anybody,
and by the way,
and take advantage of it.
Give Bill Bratton a call, too. Call Rudy Giuliani.
Somebody.
You want to call Bloomberg? You want to call...
Well, he doesn't like what
you call Big Bird.
De Blasio?
No. Yeah, but we should call... You know what we should call? We should call about the United States Attorney to investigate De Blasio and his wife.
Wait a second.
Where did that billion go?
Eric Adams still talks to Bill De Blasio. And by the way, he badmouthed Rudy Giuliani not that long ago and said that when Rudy ran the city, his policies were racist, and that's why Eric Adams wanted to bring us back to the David Dinkins days. I don't forget this stuff. I mean, this is incredibly crazy
you
stuff.
You know, Sid, I hate to say it, but you're right in a lot of ass.
You got
a
point there.
What do you want me to do, Sid? All right? I bet on the horse. The horse won. The horse has a lame leg. I don't know.
No, I want the Eric Adams to take advantage of what you're offering.
Well, he's our mayor right now.
Yes.
Let's hope that he understands the people's outrage. And you know what? He's a very smart guy. And he's a very smart man. He has to realize he is the leader. He's the one that makes us feel safe or not safe.
We have to declare the equivalent of martial law.
Absolutely.
In this city and fix everything. We have to just do it and do it virtually overnight. We have to lay down a gauntlet. We have to put all hands on deck, institutionalize these people, get the guns off the street. No matter what you have to do, the anti-crime units have to be very aggressive. This is, again, desperate times, martial law, the equivalent of some sort of city martial law, municipal martial law, I think would be appropriate right now.
You know, and again, who are the victims? The victims are the people of New York City, and the victims are moving out of New York City. And I will try and get in communications with our mayor, and I will tell him how I feel and how everybody feels in New York. It's in your hands. It's not my hands.
That's it.
Right now it's in your hands. You got to get to him and get his ear, both.
Right,
you.
Which you can do.
I'm gonna. Yeah. Now, you know, I don't stop for words.
No, you don't.
I'm gonna tell you something. What's going on is crazy, and people are scared. And I just gave you an example. I told my friend whose daughter's gonna work in New York.
Yep.
Please do not let her go on the
subway. No. You're right. Listen,
all the love.
All the love. Yes.
Love you, and you get better there, young man.
You know that.
We got stuff to do. Okay.
Thanks. To you, I'm on the way. Thank you.
Yeah, Bo. I love you.
Love you too. That was a great appearance by Bo Dietl, and you could check his Instagram on Friday morning. Eric Adams will be at Rayo's, I promise you, on Thursday night. More of Bernie and Sid on this Tuesday morning right after these words.
We are New York. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Talk Radio 77. WABC.
Climb a ladder on a water tower. If you want to go anywhere.
Chase Rice, 8:04 on your Tuesday morning, back here on the Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show. Bernard is back today. That's the great news. Great to see Bernie. 77 WABC listeners, go check out the new Bernie and Sid in the Morning merchandise. That's at the 77 WABC store. Do it right now. Go to WABCRadioStore.com and find everything from Bernie and Sid in the Morning t-shirts to hats to jackets to bags to even citizens t-shirts. Luckily for Bernie and Sid listeners, we've got a limited time discount. Enter discount code BernieAndSid15 at the checkout for 15% off your purchase at the 77 WABC store. That's discount code BernieAndSid15 for 15% off your purchase. Lisa Ganji bought a bunch of stuff. Thank you, Lisa. Go to WABCRadioStore.com right now. And when you get your merchandise, download the 77 WABC Radio app. Take a picture of yourself with it. Go to the upload section, upload your photo, and you'll have the chance to be featured on Bernie and Sid in the Morning's Instagram, which, by the way, is at It's Bernie and Sid, at It's Bernie and Sid. My Instagram is at Rosenberg.Sydney, at Rosenberg.Sydney. As you folks know, Bernie back today. I had the funeral yesterday. I talked about it in detail in the 6 o'clock hour. Not going to do it again, but in case they are listening, because they do every day, the family, friends of the Prieto family, Al, Danielle, and Antonio, and the Iovine family, and Gloria, Joseph, Lizzie, all of you. We love you. Yesterday was brutal. It was brutal, but there was a lot of love there, too. So that is what I left the cemetery, the mausoleum in Woodbridge with yesterday, the amount of love that we saw between the funeral home and that beautiful mass at the chapel. That is what I saw. So last night, Bernie, Ava got accepted into San Diego State University. She doesn't want to go there. And she also got accepted into the University of Hawaii, which she does want to go. But she's waiting very impatiently to find out, maybe even as early as today, UCLA and USC. And all I'm seeing all morning long is this beautiful girl, Brianna Kupfer. If you don't know the story, Brianna, UCLA student, working by the university, some psycho, just like this crazy person who threw the Asian lady on the train, walked into a job. I mean, a really beautiful, not that it matters, it doesn't matter, but a beautiful blonde UCLA student, and he stabbed her to death.
In an upscale restaurant store.
Yes.
Furniture store.
By UCLA.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Just walked in, like you say. She's working. She's a grad student, actually.
Yes. And just random. I mean, he didn't know the guy. He didn't know her. He walked in. He was going to kill somebody, and he knifed to death this beautiful blonde grad student at UCLA. And I guess, again, it's hitting home for me because we just spoke at dinner last night with Ava about her chances of getting in to UCLA and USC. But, you know, it's just California, another example, like New York, of a state, and especially the big cities, New York and Los Angeles, where they allow criminals to run wild.
It's happening all over the place, even, smaller states, smaller cities, Toledo, Ohio, South Bend, Indiana, Camden, New Jersey, whatever. And I'll go a little deep on this. I'll say this is all this atmosphere of lawlessness, which to some extent already existed because of the culture. But it was exacerbated exponentially by the overreaction to the death of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and the cowardice on the part of corporations, sporting organizations, et cetera, people. All these, everybody just sucked their thumb. They said, defund the police. Cops are terrible. And this is the result of the whole thing. This is it. This is what happened.
Well, that was part of the back and forth I had yesterday with the Reverend A.R. Bernard, who came on to celebrate ML King Day. And he was great. He's a lovely guy. You know, him and the rabbi do a terrific job Sunday mornings.
Yep.
But, I said, listen, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about Colin Kaepernick. I don't want to hear about BLM. I don't want to hear it. Because the truth is that the problems in this country, when it comes to that are not nearly as bad as these people depict it to be. And if anything, they're causing even a bigger racial divide. And when smart people like you, AR, God-bearing smart people like you, buy into it, it doesn't give a lot of hope to the morons out there who don't know any better than to just follow what you guys are saying. That's basically what I said to him, right? Yesterday, AR Bernard, and it was a nice, more of a pleasant exchange, but it was certainly contentious, yes?
Yeah, it was very respectful, but you said what needed to be said.
And of course, who's being victimized most? We're pointing out the UCLA lady.
But the lady on the train here?
The lady on the train, Asian lady on the train. But still, the overwhelming number of victims, they're the people who A.R. Bernard purports to represent and want to. They're black people.
Right.
They're minorities.
Right.
Innocent, hardworking black people, minorities, Latinos in the inner cities. These are the people that are being disproportionately victimized because of this this atmosphere of lawlessness caused by the overreaction to the death of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter.
Well, I brought up George Floyd specifically. I said, AR, look at this guy. Arrested 9 times. Put a gun in a pregnant woman's stomach. Let me say this as nicely as I can. George Floyd was a scumbag. Didn't deserve to die. I'm sick of saying it. I know, you laugh.
You said that to AR?
Did I not say it? I said, I'm sick and tired of us burning down our cities. Exactly. Burning down our cities and turning our country upside down. I go, and by the way, AR, isn't it kind of odd to you? This is an exact quote. Isn't it kind of odd to you that almost every one of these people were lowlives, criminals and lowlives? That's not the point. The point is that there's a movement going, I don't want to hear about your movement. Okay? If you're going to burn down a city, if you're going to tell us something needs to change, don't use a guy who's been arrested 9 times, who did not deserve to die, I get that, but don't use him as your catalyst to try to change. He's not the guy.
Same thing with
That's right, I said it.
Thank you, Levin.
Same thing with the mutt in the suburb of Minneapolis, who the cop was convicted of manslaughter for killing after he tried to bolt. Remember, they actually televised his funeral. Al Sharpton spoke at it. Yeah. This guy actually shot somebody who was paralyzed to this day. He robbed a girl at knife point. She's traumatized. I played clips of her crying. She's gotten death threats.
Yeah.
These aren't the people you want to be championing. No. That cop there, that woman, never shot her gun one time during her, she was a 28-year veteran. She could have quit, by the way. The reason why that arrest was botched, she was training somebody because they didn't have enough police. She stayed with the force. She said, you know what? I'm going to stay and try to help out. And they gave her somebody to try to train, and he botched the collar.
Yes.
And then she whipped out, instead of the taser, she whipped out the gun. We saw it was an accident on TV.
I mean, there's no difference.
And now she's in jail, and nobody cares.
No,
nobody says boo.
No different than Alec Baldwin. It was an accidental shooting. No different. But this girl was vilified. On the other hand, AR
vilified. She's not going to get out of jail for 25 years.
I know. The cop in Minnesota who committed this horrible act to George Floyd, we all agree it was murder. We all agree. He's in jail for the rest of his life.
Faced the death penalty the day he was arrested. Day one.
Right. So what are we burning? What are we? And when he says it's not about George Floyd, Bernard, wait a second. There's a bust of George Floyd in Brooklyn. If it's not about George Floyd, and it's just about the movement and all this nonsense, then why is there a bust of George Floyd in Brooklyn? Why is that?
Exactly right. And as you point out, the cop was charged. And as we know from statistics, there is no more white people, more unarmed white men are shot by police than unarmed black men.
It's not even close.
We know this.
Now, we know there's more white people, obviously.
Right, but still, the fact that the notion that there's some sort of epidemic of unarmed blacks being killed by police, totally debunked, totally false, easily verified. Look it up. It's the stats are there, the crime stats. Joe Biden's Department of Justice, the woke DOJ, will provide them for you.
Right. So you get these morons on 96th Street. I bring it up every week, these old Jewish people with, like, white or gray hair, whatever they are. And they stand there with this big sign, stop killing black people, big sign on the corner of 96th and Broadway. And you know, of course, I find my way there every Friday, and I run up and I scream at them, you know who kills black people? Black people. And someone always says, hey, the guy happens to be right. But on a serious note, let's talk about what Bo just talked about. You know, who's killing black people? Black people. Who's killing innocent people every day in New York City? Homeless, crazy, disturbed people. And by the way, some black people. Not white supremacists, folks. Not white supremacists. How are we going to fix the problem when we continue to lie to each other about what the real problem is?
Yeah, well, they have Joe Biden. You have Sleepy Joe, the race-baiting POS, Merrick Garland, all these people. The white supremacy is the biggest domestic terror threat facing our nation. Really?
Well, Eric Adams just said it, too. Again, I keep bringing up Eric Adams. Isn't it amazing that in every one of our conversations, every one of them, he finds a place. He hired his brother. He hired his brother to combat the threats from white supremacy. Eric Adams just said that.
And just like, if, for example, in New York City, give me one example.
I don't have any.
Give me one. Eric, please. Can you show me one example of white supremacy? That's why you hired your brother? I mean, I'm begging you. And as far as, look, there are white supremacists. There are, Asian Pacific Islander supremacists. There are a bunch of nuts, screwballs, nutcakes all over the place. But that is not our biggest domestic terror threat. That is not our. That's not the threat that we face that's threatening to ruin the nation. It's not that. Not by a long shot. That type of race baiting, that type of lying is so dangerous. I mean, it comes from within, and it's a harsh thing to say. I love the black community, but the fatherlessness in the black community, among other things, cultural things, music and stuff like that.
Drugs.
Yeah, but it starts really with the nuclear family.
Of course.
You don't have a role model as a dad, and of course, you glamorize certain things that shouldn't be glamorized. And this is where it's all stemming from. Yeah. And nobody's talking about it.
I was watching Michelle Obama. I wasn't. I shouldn't say that. Danielle put it on last night. Michelle Obama was talking about college. And it was ironic because it was literally moments after we were having this UCLA discussion with Ava, where she's going to college. And Michelle was saying that, you know, it's not easy when you send your daughter off to college and you got to say goodbye and now you can't watch her. Literally moments after we had that discussion with her own daughter. So it was pretty ironic. But, she talked about the White House and she talked about all these beautiful things and these beautiful schools. And it didn't seem to me like Michelle Obama gave a rat's ass about the real issues inside the black community. She's the type of person, this is why I got angry with Danielle, made her shut it off, that would rather just blame white people for the position that a lot of a community is in, rather than, as Charles Barkley says, every once in a while, take a look in the mirror. Take a look in the mirror.
That's it. And just let's not forget incidents like Waukesha. I mean, we have pretty much swept that under the rug. Charlottesville, there was one person killed. It was horrible, terrible, horrific what happened. That was, I guess, a white supremacist or some sort of affiliation with some sort of group like that. But the guy in Waukesha killed a lot more people, and they completely ignored it. They completely and totally ignored it. They're trying to Waukesha the whole Texas synagogue incident, sweep it under the rug. They tried that. They didn't get away with it, but they did try. It was really disgusting yesterday. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk with Dove Hykind coming up a little bit later this hour. But the things that they focus on, and they think we're all stupid, but I think the public is really waking up. We see some of these polls out. This here is a big deal. A lot of people were citing this yesterday. This poll that says that identify as Democrat in the first quarter of 2021 was 49%. And now it's 42%, as opposed to Republican in the first quarter of 2021, it's 40%. Now it's 47% of people identifying as Republican, according to this Gallup poll right now, this Gallup survey.
Yeah. CBS had a poll out yesterday, too. 50% of the public is frustrated, at the very least, with Joe Biden, and his approval rating is down to 37%.
Yeah, it's just as it should be, and 37%. Who among those 37%? What do they see? What the freak do they see that warrants? Yeah, give him two thumbs up.
They just hate Trump. That's it. There's no other rational explanation. He has botched every single thing he's done. Everything he's done, from the border to COVID to Afghanistan to the economy to inflation to the supply chain. There's not one thing this guy hasn't botched. So whoever likes him, they'd rather like him and continue to hate Donald Trump.
And that he picked that I mentioned earlier on the Sunday morning shows, you have the supply chain crisis. Where's Sneaky Pete Buttigieg? Nowhere. You have heating oil and gas up 50-60% over last year, not to mention just regular gas that you buy at a gas station. Where is the transportation secretary, Jennifer Granholm, on the Sunday morning shows addressing that? Nowhere. Where was Alejandro Mayorkas yesterday on he's the head of the Department of Homeland Security. Where was he on the whole Texas synagogue thing? Nowhere.
Nope.
Nowhere to be found.
Nope.
So everybody that Joe Biden has appointed, they've all turned out to be incompetent, including Kamala Harris, the worst. Incompetent, just beyond belief incompetent and apathetic. They don't care. They're arrogant. They're liars. And so people are seeing it. I don't care that they hate Trump. Trump gave a great speech in Arizona. It was on Newsmax Saturday night.
It was great.
The guy, mean tweets, maybe a little rough around the edges. He knew what he was doing. He took care of things. He got things done. I mean, you know, he made us energy independent. Operation Warp Speed, a million things I could go down the list. Yeah. Everything was going swimmingly, smoothly, as you can imagine, as you could possibly imagine. And so hatred of Trump, just watching your country go down the dumper, go down the toilet because you hate Trump, you're a psycho, you're a sicko, if that gives you your pleasure.
Very selfish, no question. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Bernie mentioned it, Dove Hykind. On the hostage situation we saw last weekend in Dallas at the synagogue, will join us coming up at 8:45. He's always a terrific guest. We'll play Beat Sid coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up next, she does a great job every weekday afternoon sitting alongside John Catsimatidis at 5, and she's here every weekday morning at 8:25. Lydia Serrani, Lydia Reports, is next on Bernie and Sid.
This is Lydia Reports on 77 WABC. Here's Lydia Serrani.
You know, guys, yesterday we were talking about what would Martin Luther King Jr. think about the way progressives, some Democrats, are behaving today, especially our leaders, the divisive rhetoric. And a prime example of just how divisive the rhetoric can be comes right from our president, President Biden. This video surfaced again a year later of what he said. And it's kind of hard to believe that our president actually said something like this. Take a listen.
But even Dr. King's assassination did not have the worldwide impact that George Floyd's death did.
I mean, for him to even put Dr. King and George Floyd in the same sentence is absolutely ridiculous. To this day, we're still talking about what a pioneer Dr. King was. George Floyd was a victim of a crime, okay? His assailant has been put behind bars. He's been charged. He's been convicted of murder. And that's it. That's the end of it. And for him to even kind of compare and do that sort of race baiting is disgusting.
Well, you happen to be correct. Though George Floyd did have, we were just talking about it. He had one hell of, the overreaction to his death, I should say, created what we're living through right now, this atmosphere of lawlessness, this terrible atmosphere. So, I mean, he was, what happened to him did influence the nation in a great way, but there's no comparison between the two men.
Right, but he didn't compare the two men, and I don't want to defend Joe Biden because I can't stand him. The only point he made, and Bernie, you just pointed out, he's actually right, is that George Floyd's death, it did impact the world and nation. We both agreed that it was a bit much, too much, in fact, way too much. But his point was not wrong. Although it wasn't like he said, oh, they're both great men, or blah, blah, blah. He was just talking about the impact of the death.
Well, no, I think Dr. King's death was a huge wake-up call for everybody that, you know, the only way to drive out darkness is with light. And, the only way to drive out hate is with love. And Dr. King,
I don't think you remember the streets in 1968 when he got killed. But I can tell you, I was here in 2020, and I find it hard to believe that anybody's death rocked this nation more than George Floyd. I'm just saying.
We were a powder keg. I think it could have been anybody. It didn't have to be George Floyd.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
They were looking for an excuse.
You're arguing two different things. You're trying to put the two guys in the same sentence. And Biden, again, I hate defending him, but he is right. George Floyd's death had a huge impact, huge, much bigger than we would have liked, but he wasn't wrong in that statement.
And I would add this, back in 68 when, Martin Luther King was killed, there was no talk of, it wasn't followed up by craziness, by lunacy, like defund the police and all that stuff.
Right.
It wasn't. But this George Floyd phenomenon was.
Yes.
And I must, to your credit, Sid, because I'll never forget it. When Biden first said that a year ago, or whatever it was, we played it. And you said to me, you know what? I think he's right. And I said to you, you know what I would do, Sid? I said to you, I'd wait about a year or so before I make a comment like that. I'd wait and see what, you know, because right now we're in the middle of it. You know, it seems like, oh, this is the biggest thing ever. But in retrospect, you know, there is some validity to what you said back then.
Thank you. I don't remember
saying that.
I want
you guys
to
listen to what Dr. Alveda King said. She is MLK's niece, and she was asked on Fox News, what do you think Dr. King would say today about the state of the world and how progressives are acting in the rhetoric? Take a listen and hear what she says.
All of this is called stirring the emotions, even race baiting with CRT. You know, I think they should teach CRT in schools and teach that it is racist and why it is racist and the origins of it being racist. They don't want to do that. They just want to scare everybody. Defund the police. Yeah. Have you ever heard of anything so ridiculous? And then you have a city that is unprotected.
She's right, of course, Dr. Alveda King. You know, and those are the two things, the CRT and the which got really major traction after George Floyd. That and defund the police, decarceration, and just a general disrespect, which was already there for the police, but it rose to exponential proportions. It became acceptable to actually assault police and not be charged with it. It's just the whole thing was disgusting. But that's an interesting clip that you played, Lydia, and you know, worthy of a conversation for sure.
Absolutely, and so. Tonight, 5 o'clock, John Katsimatidis, like you heard the promo say, you never know who we'll have, but we will have some impactful, insightful discussion from newsmakers around the world. We are hearing that D.A. Bragg is kind of, you know, freaking out a little bit about the pushback on his memo. That's how delusional that guy was. He didn't think there would be so much pushback on his memo where he basically decriminalized everything, including armed robbery.
Yeah, he did
so
come out.
We shall see.
He actually came out publicly and admitted, quote, I've had a rough couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, if you're a district attorney, the guy we entrust to lock up the bad guys,
yeah,
and you pronounce the fact that you're a friend of the bad guys,
yeah,
yeah, you're going to have a tough couple of weeks, pal.
I would say so. Hey, Lydia, great job as always. And folks, you can follow Lydia on Instagram at Lydia News One, on Twitter at Lydia News. And I have to tell you, I couldn't help but out of the corner of my eye see that Fox News has Todd Kupfer on right now. He's the father of Brianna Kupfer. This was a gorgeous girl murdered at, as Bernie pointed out and correctly, a very nice high class furniture store right by the UCLA campus. She's a grad student. My daughters are going to go to UCLA. It is just another example of lawlessness. It could be Los Angeles. It could be New York. This country, specifically those two great cities, are completely out of control, and they keep showing this girl's picture, and I just – it's breaking my heart. It's just
awful.
Breaking my heart.
That and the fact that they're going to have a wake today for the girl who was shot in up at Burger King in Harlem.
Yep.
I mean, you have this Latina girl. You know, she's got the work ethic. She's going to work in a dangerous place overnight to try to make some money to help her family out. And she gives the animal some money, and he shoots her. I mean, so much heartbreaking stuff in the 40-year-old Asian lady, 9:30 in the morning on Saturday. 9:30 in the morning. I mean, I was just rolling over at 9:30 in the morning on Saturday.
Yeah, but you would think that at that time of the day it would be fine. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And
we're not that far removed, Bernie, from a 9:30 in the morning rape in Central Park,
right?
In broad daylight. I mean, these people don't care anymore.
Yep.
Nope. But this, they got to stop showing Brianna Kupfer. I mean, God rest her soul. It's too much. And her father, poor Todd. So
terrible.
Just ahead of Dope Hiking, I got this article from John moments ago. You like this, Bernard? I guess it's today's, it's on Twitter. Bill de Blasio's Twitter account. De Blasio says, I am not going to be running for governor of New York State, but I am going to devote every fiber of my being to fighting inequality in the state of New York. So the good news is, Bill's still involved. That looks great, by the way.
Inequality?
Inequality, yeah, whatever that means.
Yeah, that does look good. Look at that. That's... It's a monitor of our WABC radio.tv stream.
Pretty cool, right?
Very cool. Yeah.
Two handsome men right there.
Yes.
Oh, I see one. Just keep it that way.
No, actually, where is Bernie in the camera shot? This is a test right now. It's not. I don't think it's live right now anyway. They wanted to make sure the camera was there, you are, because you were looking up for some reason. There you go. He's putting up the peace signal.
What's up, yo?
It's my boy Bernard. Anyway, we've been talking a lot this morning about that the terrorist in Dallas who went to a synagogue in an effort to let some prisoner out, and yet the FBI and Joe Biden really refused to admit anti-Semitism was involved in this in any capacity.
Or terrorism.
Yeah, or terrorism. Exactly right, Bernie. And that's why our next guest is the perfect guest for this, because he is not afraid to talk about anti-Semitism, terrorism, and all these things that continue to haunt us in our country today. And that is our good friend, Dove Hyken. Dove, it's Moxta. Welcome back, good buddy.
Well, it's great to be with you. This latest incident, as you point out, is just totally beyond comprehension. And we are going to be calling myself, other elected officials, an investigation. We need to get to the bottom of this. What would make an FBI agent get up in front of the entire world and tell the entire world, you know, the fact this guy picked a synagogue while they were praying, you know, on the Sabbath, not a problem. It's not about Jews. It's totally, he would have picked something else, but he happened to be outside the synagogue. That's all. It is beyond comprehension. And you know what's interesting, guys? The fact is, the foreign minister of England, you know, while the FBI guy was telling us it was not anti-Semitism, it wasn't directed against Jews, the foreign minister of England said it was anti-Semitism at the very same time. So this is something that is beyond comprehension. It is beyond understanding. In fact, it is becoming more and more clear as we, you know, the fact that he picked the synagogue, guess what? You know, he was a student of anti-Semitism. You know, Jews have all the power in the world. You know, if you go after the Jews, you can get anything done. That's exactly why he went to the synagogue. So why would the FBI do this? And I just want to say, you know, we all grew up loving the FBI. You know, these are the people who put their life on the line for us all the time. But it's about the politics in the FBI. It is about the Biden administration, about Garland. We need to know. I think we deserve, you know, the transparency they always spoke about when it came to Trump. How about some of that in the Biden administration? We need to know how that happened. I mean, the guy from the FBI didn't just get up and decide to say this without any information. What in God's name happened? Because this undermined the war against anti-Semitism.
Dove Hyken on the Bernie and Sid Show, former New York State Assemblyman. Dove, clearly it was his woke bosses at the DOJ that told him to soft pedal this. Do not emphasize anti-Semitism. Back off on the Muslim aspect of it. Turns out this guy came here around New Year's Day, give or take 2 days before, 2 days after. He was on the British intelligence radar, and they still granted him a visa. It makes no sense whatsoever. So this was, again, an orchestrated woke effort, and that FBI guy was following orders. Now, I want to know, Dove, who you're more angry at, that FBI guy or at the President of the United States himself for saying this.
Do you know why he targeted that specific synagogue?
Well, no, I don't. We don't have, I don't think there is sufficient information to know about why he targeted that synagogue, why he insisted on the release of someone who's been in prison for over 10 years, why he was engaged, why he was using anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli comments. We just don't have enough facts.
Yeah, it couldn't possibly be anti-Semitism and terrorism. By the way, the lady who we wanted released, she's in jail for like 80 years for some sort of terrorist-related activities. Her nickname is Lady Al-Qaeda. And we still couldn't. We couldn't connect the dots.
86 years, by the way, in prison. That's her term. She was going to murder American soldiers. You know, when you mention Biden or the FBI agent, you know, to me, Biden is missing in action. He's basically sleeping, even when he's not sleeping. I mean, really, he's just when you watch him, you got to feel demoralized. how sad it is that this is the leader of our country. He has no clue what's going on. It's pathetic. And the bottom line is, we need to find out the facts. That's all it is. How in God's name, you know, he just happened to pick the synagogue. He was on the corner. You know, he was in the neighborhood.
Right.
Maybe he was going to pray at the synagogue. Who knows? He just happened to be there. I mean, it is so bizarre. It is so crazy. And as I pointed out, the foreign minister of England got it immediately. She called it anti-Semitism. But in our country, and by the way, here's something else. How safe do we feel in this country when someone like this, Malik Faisal Akram, could get into this country so easily a couple of weeks ago?
Right. Even his brother.
And how did that happen? How did that happen? How safe are we?
Even his brother asked that question. Today's New York Post, it's the actual cover of the paper. His brother said, how the hell did my brother fly into this country and do what he did? Let's ask you, Dov Hykind. I mean, obviously, me and Bernie think there was some anti-Semitism behind the FBI and the president not talking about the Jews and even a terrorist attack. Is it that simple, Dove? Do you agree that's what it is, some anti-Semitism on their part?
Well, I think it was, the Democratic Party is more interested in being politically correct than anything else in the world. That's why they cater to the Talibs and the Omars and the rest of that radical anti-Semitic group. So unfortunately, when it came to this, it was an attempt to avoid making this into, anything to do with Islam. The fact is, Sid, Bernie, that Linda Sarsour, CARE, many of the Muslim organizations in this country, guess what? They have been fighting to get Lady Al-Qaeda out of prison.
Yeah. Hey,
for the
listen,
longest period of time. So they are involved in trying to get this terrorist out of prison. Now they're all excited. You know, we're against this. You know, Linda Sarsour, who's a noted anti-Semite, suddenly she's in solidarity with the synagogue. You know, this is a real problem. You know, we've talked about it, about the Democratic Party, and thank God there is some positive news. More Americans today, latest poll, have a connection, identify with the Republican Party than the Democratic Party. To me, that is the greatest news I could possibly hear, that people are getting it. People are understanding that the Democratic Party is a disaster, a total, total disaster. The policies of the Biden administration, I mean, we knew we'd have problems with Biden. Did anyone expect that it would be this bad after one single year?
No, absolutely. This is catastrophic is what it is. These are catastrophic proportions. You know, there are several ladies in public life vying for the title of Lady Al-Qaeda. I'll just leave it at that. And by the way, Biden had no problem labeling Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist on night one. He didn't have to wait for the facts to come in. He's a white supremacist. That's Joe Biden. Quickly, Dov Hykind is no bigger New Yorker than Dov Hykind. We have to ask you your thoughts on our current new mayor, Eric Adams. We had a lot of hope for him coming in. Front page of the New York Post today, still that the Asian lady was pushed onto the subway tracks. By the way, hate crimes against Asians and Jews off the charts in New York City. But either way, he said the subways are safe. It's a perception problem. What are your thoughts on Eric Adams, Dov Hykind?
He's living on a different planet.
Yeah.
If he thinks the subways are safe, with a woman just being shoved onto the tracks, and hey, numbers don't lie. People lie, they make up facts, but the numbers don't lie, the statistics don't lie. So look, I want to give him a little more of a chance, but for him to get up and think that he can tell us, it's okay, you don't have to worry, you don't have to be concerned. That's not being honest with the people of this city. The people of this city deserve honesty, and we need to get that from our elected officials, starting with the mayor. The mayor promised a lot. He was going to make this city safe. He understood that supporting the police was important and that we need to not only not defund the police, we need to increase funding for the police. So when he says, things are okay, not a problem, he's not living on Earth.
Nope, he's not. And again, the honesty, he should be angry. He should have, the next day, he should have been very angry instead, trying to sell us a bill of goods that doesn't exist. As always, Dov Hykin, you're not good. You're great. Great to catch up with you, our good friend. And please keep coming by. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bernie. Thank you, Sid.
All right, Dov. Dov Hykin, who spent the better part of 4 decades as a big-time assemblyman out there in Borough Park, Brooklyn. I do want to bring something up. I know that, you know, I had that horrible funeral yesterday, and you're going through your own stuff, but I know you did just suffer a tragic loss in your own family. I know your mother-in-law, who, great lady, lived into her 90s like my nana did, and by the way, had the same name, Florence, as my nana and my grandmother. I know she just passed away.
Passed away 2 days ago. Yes. Florence Petrovich, my wife, my beautiful wife's a mom. My wife, by the way, is the rock of my life right now. I mean, she's always has been, but never has it been more evident than now. And in the middle of it all, she gets a call on Sunday morning. Your mom just passed away sitting on her favorite couch. She was living in Jackson Heights, 93 years old. So in addition to everything else, my wife and the rest of the family, but particularly Carol, has to deal with that as well. Yeah.
So now she's going to be probably heading down to Florida, I guess, for a funeral in, in a couple of days.
Her dad is buried. His dad is a veteran. Yeah. He's buried in a veteran cemetery. And, yes, she's going to be traveling
Newport,
down for
Richie,
that.
Yeah. Well, sorry again to you and Carol and your whole family.
Thank
and,
you, Sydney. Thanks
sounded
for
like a wonderful lady. Your wife even said she was a big-time polka dancer.
She was great. Yeah, she was just she just loved life. She was a terrific mom and a terrific mother-in-law as well. I mean, you have these, you know, typical mother-in-law stories. I had none of that. She was just a lovely lady.
Rest in peace, Florence Petrovich, and all of our love, certainly from your son-in-law, Bernard, and your honorary son-in-law, Sid Rosenberg. Sorry, Carol. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with the fourth and final hour of Bernie and Sid right after these words.
This is the news and talk station of New York with Bernie and Sid in the morning.
What is going on?
Real. New York, 77 WABC. We are New York, Bernie and Sid in the morning. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, ladies and gentlemen, heard everywhere on that 77 WABC app, simulcast out on Eastern Long Island, News Talk 107.1 FM. Also, you can watch us on your smart TVs, on your computers, at WABCRadio.tv. That's right, we're live streamed right there, WABCRadio.tv. You know, Corey Zelnick is in the house, one of my favorite people, and it's great to see him. I guess you're going to speak to him a little bit later, but are you doing well, Corey?
I'm doing great, Bernie.
You look terrific. You look fantastic.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I've been waiting about a week or so now. I've been telling Sid to come by. I just wanted to see you. You know, we've become friends over the last couple, 3 years, and it's been wonderful to get to know you and to be here and think about what you're going through, and I wish there was more I could do. If there's anything I could do, I just want to be supportive of you.
You are doing it right now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And it's so great to see you.
The pleasure is really all mine, mutual at the very least, but I would say all mine. Corey Zelnick in the house. Listen, Corey, you're a big sports fan, right?
Yes, sir.
They kicked Djokovic out of Australia.
Yeah.
Get him out.
I mean,
what was he thinking? If you've been watching the news, though, they did blackball it a lot. I mean, what you've seen in Australia, you go to Australia unvaccinated. You're lucky they didn't put you, put you in front of a firing squad.
You're right.
So anyway, the poor bastard is back in Serbia. He's going to lose a lot of money. He may not be able to return for a few years. He may be barred from the French Open, Djokovic. And I've been watching a lot of sports these past few weeks, I have to tell you. Escapism. I mean, I can't take news all the time. I even watched the Knicks yesterday. I watched the Knicks
That's the worst game they played in about 2 weeks.
I was there.
They
were I know,
you
but
were
it was
there?
Awful. It was
you
awful.
Were there.
But here's the thing.
He's got great tickets, by
it's
the way,
Mike,
Corey.
I realize that. But it's Mike Breen and it's Walt Clyde Frazier.
That's it.
And it's like eating comfort food.
Yeah,
it really
it's
in the garden. And so that's why I watch it. But I also watched the football game. I watched the Cowboys and the 49ers.
Sunday.
The last minute took like an hour. But it was still exciting. I couldn't turn it away.
Dallas had a chance to win if they would have thrown the ball to the end zone two or three times instead of running the football with no timeouts and 30 seconds left.
Unbelievably, right? Yeah.
I mean, come on.
It was incredible. Yeah. Also, you had this this University of Pennsylvania swimmer, the transgender, who was beating biological girls left and right all over the place, stealing their dreams, if you ask me. He's just cheating. He's cheating is what he's doing. He's a guy. And so... The interesting thing is he called himself, according to the girls on the team, he's been calling himself the Jackie Robinson of swimming.
That's unreal.
I mean.
And just so you folks know, what he means by that is Jackie, of course, broke the color barrier in baseball, and he has broken the transgender barrier in swimming. So there is an analogy to be made, I guess, but it's nauseating.
No. Jackie Robinson wasn't cheating.
That's true.
Jackie Robinson was playing on a
left. But he's not cheating either, this guy.
Oh, sure he is.
No, he's not.
Oh,
if he was cheating, he wouldn't be allowed to swim. You and I think he's cheating, but he's not cheating. He's on the team.
He is, but fundamentally, he's cheating.
I understand.
He's a male with bigger muscles, bigger bones.
Listen, I'm with you 100%, but the truth is he is a transgender. He's allowed to swim. So in that respect, he is breaking a barrier. Well, it's nauseating, and it's not right, but he is.
He is the Jackie Martling of swimming. He's a clown. He's a cheating, selfish clown, if you ask me. And I have nothing.
Wait a second. Why him? Why isn't Pennsylvania? I'm more angry with Pennsylvania.
You're right. You're right.
You're putting him on the team.
Because they're afraid. They're cowards. You're absolutely right that he should not be allowed to. The rules are set up so that he can do it, and so he's taking advantage of it.
Right.
But
he's not a pervert. He's not.
Not that we know of.
Well, that's true.
But there's no. I mean, he has a moral compass, doesn't he? He's got to realize what he's doing to these girls. And again, I have nothing against a guy who wants to wear a dress, and he wants to be called a woman's name.
Right.
That's fine with me.
We've done that once or twice.
Saturday.
It was 2001.
High heels. But I've been telling you, the woman who's winning Jeopardy. Is a transgender.
She's still winning?
She's won like $1.2 million.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I think she passed James Holzhauer in the number of games or whatever the hell it is.
Wow.
But I have nothing against all that. Just don't use the women's locker rooms and bathrooms.
Totally agree.
And don't compete against them in sports. Then go about your business.
Yeah, but again, I have to blame the schools and the system before I blame the person. Because if they didn't have a conduit to do it, they wouldn't be able to do it. So if this guy, and I think this guy really does, I don't think he's one of those pervs just trying to see girls naked. If he really considers himself to be that way, that's on him. But once the colleges and the schools allow him to do it, to me, they're the ones more at blame than he is.
Well, to me, he's no better than Mark McGuire, Jose Canseco, guys like that.
Well, that's fair. They cheated. They did steroids.
Yeah, I mean,
but again, that wasn't illegal in baseball either.
Right. But again.
But they did cheat.
They cheated, and I believe him to be cheating as well. I think it's really just criminal to steal these girls' dreams and their scholarships and stuff like that, or whatever it is. Just I mean, they're not going to go anywhere. But swimming. My daughter played volleyball in college, and it was a big deal to her.
Of course,
if she had some dude that was a little taller, a little stronger, and he took her place. She would have been heartbroken. And so that's the way I feel about these
fair.
Girls as well.
Same thing with Ava with tennis. Now, by the way, the good news is this transgender swimmer, while just crushing all the women, and that will continue, he did face another transgender swimmer a week or two ago, and he lost.
Good. Yeah. And now Michael Phelps, Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps, actually weighed in on it. And like a few other sports figures, Martina Navratilova, couple of others, and even you have people like J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, weighing in on this, saying what a travesty it is. But anyway, this is what Michael Phelps said. Let's see how he navigates this minefield.
I think this leads back to the organizing committees again, because it has to be a level playing field. I think that's something that we all need. Like, that's what sports are. And for me, I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know what's going to happen. I believe that we all should feel comfortable with who we are in our own skin. But I think sports should all be played at an even playing field. I don't know what that looks like in the future, but it's hard. it's very complicated, and this is my sport. This has been my sport my whole entire career. And I honestly, the one thing I would love is everybody to be able to compete on an even playing field.
Well, he's saying the right things about the even playing field. Yeah. He's right about that. But I don't think it's that complicated. I mean, you if you want to be a transgender swimmer, compete against other transgender swimmers. That's it.
That's
not,
simple.
It's not complicated.
Boys against boys, girls against girls, transgenders against transgenders.
Right.
He's a doofus, though. I mean, let's be honest. I know he won gold medals, and I guess he's a hero. I don't know. He does the weedy stuff. But you ever see his commercials? He's a real doofus, this Michael Phelps, no?
No, he's not. He's
a goofy-looking guy. I mean, I don't know.
He ain't no Brad Pitt.
He's got money? He's got big money?
He's got check. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's
that
huge.
Doesn't help. He's still goofy-looking.
Right to the bank.
I never see him on the Wheaties boxes. All I ever see is...
that was a long time ago. He was on for a long time.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then they caught him smoking weed.
When they caught him smoking weed. They took him off the box.
Right.
That's right, Corey. Good job.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Weed. Okay.
Because he's a white guy. You know, when a black guy smokes weed, he gets to get on the box. White guy smokes weed, he's off the box.
LeBron James is on the box, and I remember what he said, I don't F with no white people or something. And
he did say that.
It didn't seem
it was unfortunate. It was during the HBO Shop Show.
And I love Wheaties. I got to sit there and look at LeBron James.
Well, he actually said when he was a kid in Akron, he didn't like white people. When I was a kid in Akron, I didn't F with those white people.
Something like that.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
So, and then you had, of course, sticking with the sports motif here. And that doesn't mean, more teeth.
See what he just did?
What happened?
Right.
Listen, the Golden State Warriors, they have a part owner. And he's got a pretty difficult sort of Indian name to pronounce.
Urgai or something? How do you say it?
Sharmatif or something.
Okay. Yeah, very difficult. Either way, he's part owner of the Golden State Warriors. And this clip made me laugh. He was talking on a podcast about the NBA doing business with China, despite China's record with the Uyghurs, the Muslims, the concentration camps, the genocide, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what he said. Take a listen.
Yeah, nobody cares about what's happening to the Uyghurs, okay? You bring it up because you really care, and I think
what
that's nice that you
cares?
Care. The rest of us don't care. I'm just telling you a very hard...
Wait, you're saying you personally don't care?
I'm telling you a very hard, ugly truth, okay? Of all the things that I care about, yes, it is below my line.
That's absolutely freaking hilarious.
It is. True.
Mean, the fact of the matter is, you walk down the street, talk to the average person, people really don't care about the Chinese Uyghurs. But the issue is this, is that if you're going to be this social justice warrior league like the NBA, you can't be one thing in the United States and another thing dealing with somebody like China that did what they did, that does what they do to these Uyghurs, oppressing them, stopping them from having babies, killing them, putting them in concentration camps. It's really more about hypocrisy. But his brutal honesty there was nobody cares. Slavery, by the way, there's slavery in Africa right now.
Yes.
Nobody seems to care because
nobody
why? Because it's not perpetrated by white people. It's perpetrated by other Africans. So nobody cares.
I mean, a few years ago, the GM of the Houston Rockets actually came out and talked about how he thought the people had a right to be upset in Hong Kong. But otherwise, there's a lot of guys in that league making a heck of a lot of money. And LeBron James specifically, he's one of those guys. And they just don't want to hear it. They just don't want to hear
it. Nobody cares.
Nobody
cares.
It's not
high on my list of issues.
A lot of those Uyghurs are making these, they're in prison, of course, but the slave labor you talk about in China, they're making these guys sneakers every day, and they're fully aware. They know.
I'd love to see this guy run into Enes Kanter.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
No, they're on the same side, him and Enes Kanter. His issue is going to be with his head coach, who's the most woke coach in the NBA. He's worse than Popovich and Van Gundy, and that's Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. He's the most woke guy in the league.
Yeah, but he doesn't seem to care about the Chinese Uyghurs. He never says anything about them.
Who, Steve Kerr?
Yeah.
Of course not.
Never says a word, so he's not on the same page. As Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr apparently doesn't care about the Uyghurs because he doesn't say anything about them.
That's true.
Whereas Enes Kanter is...
No, Enes and Kerr are on different pages, yes.
Yes.
Right.
Indeed.
So is Kerr and the guy from the Golden State Warriors, I think, the GM. I think what he said was, nobody cares about the Uyghurs. What was his exact point, exactly? Nobody cares about the Uyghurs, so it's just business as usual? Is that it?
Yeah, that was it, exactly. Yeah, nobody cares. Shut up about your stupid issue.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to do business, and you know, let's talk about Stephon Curry or something like that right now.
I mean, what do you think he was trying to imply there, Corey?
I'm not sure where he was going, because he's a huge, huge software investor, huge investor in all the major, major companies who all do business over there.
Is that right?
So, yeah, I think it's very interesting that he would go down that path, even tongue-in-cheek, if it was meant
right.
to be that way.
Right.
I think it's crazy. He's got a ton, beyond sneakers, he's got a ton of business. This guy's a huge, huge wealthy guy.
That explains it even further.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, forget about it. Let it go. Drop it.
Right.
Forget it. That's the way it is.
I mean, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets is another guy that has...
Joseph Tsai.
And he's Chinese, right?
Yeah,
and he's got a ton. I mean, he makes billions, I would imagine, back in China, right?
Absolutely.
One last thing, gentlemen.
You have any buildings in China?
I do not.
Start.
Okay. It's the future. And nobody cares about the Wiggers.
Exactly.
Listen, lastly, Joe Biden just botched everything up with his Georgia speech about voting rights, the easier to cheat law that he wants to pass by getting rid of the filibuster. It's not going to happen. He essentially said, if you're not with me, you're a bigot. You're Jefferson Davis. You're Bull Connor. Blah, blah, blah. He went on and on. And he got reamed by everybody. And by the way, Stacey Abrams, this is like her big deal, is voter suppression is like her big deal. By the way, more people voted in the 2020 election in November of 2020 than voted in any election in the history of this country.
It's got to be, because when you add up the votes between Biden and Trump, it's like 153 million. One guy got 80, one guy got 73.
It is true. It's very true. And where's the voter suppression? What are you talking about? But anyway, they want to normalize what happened in November of 2020, make it easier to cheat. Anyway, Democrats left and right were really just livid about what Joe Biden said. No, Republicans were, of course, but some Democrats were as well. Even Al Sharpton, Dick Durbin. But anyway, effectively, it seems like Joe Biden's administration sort of figuratively ended last week. They were killing him on the fake news channels all weekend long. But one guy who summed it up nicely, I would say, is a guy who once marched with Black Lives Matter. His name is Mitt Romney. Listen to what he said.
He's got to recognize that when he was elected, people were not looking for him to transform America. They were looking to get back to normal, to stop the crazy. And it seems like we're continuing to see the kinds of policy and promotions that are not accepted by the American people. Look, James Carville just said that, you know, he's had a bad week, but not a bad year. No, as a matter of fact, he's had a bad year. He's had 52 weeks of a bad week.
you tell him, Mittens. You tell him. And by the way, this was all over the place.
That's the first time I've liked Mitt Romney since he ran against Obama.
Yeah. Well, I have much more I could play, but in the interest of time, I will conclude this particular segment.
Well, your day is concluded now. You're heading back, in the interest of transparency, you're heading back to the hospital now for some more tests today.
Well, some consultations.
Right, some consultations. And we'll see you again tomorrow, and we'll know more about exactly where you are in this process, good or bad, and we think it's going to be good. We'll know more about it tomorrow.
No doubt. All the love, my brothers.
All the love.
All the love. Corey
and
Zelnick,
once again,
Sid Rosenberg.
A healthy condolence to Carol for your mother-in-law, Florence. God rest
Florence
her soul.
Florence Petrovich. Rest in peace. Yes, indeed. All right, gentlemen. See you tomorrow.
See you. We love you.
Stay positive, Bern.
That's the great Bernard McGurk. He'll be back tomorrow morning at 6. We got more to do. We got Beat Sid. We'll spend a little time with Corey. He's one of these psychos who thinks New York is going to be fine, but he's a lovely kid. But, I mean, God, you talk about delusional. Jesus. And we'll come back with more Bernie and Sid on a Tuesday right after this.
Right now on 77 WABC, stay informed with Bernie and Sid in the morning. Then at noon, it's Charlie Kirk. And at 1:15, it's Brent Kelly on 77 WABC.
OJ's Backstabbers, 9:27. Bernie's on his way back to the doctor. He's going to find out what all these tests have meant over the last couple of weeks. We'll get some results today and hopefully have some of that for you tomorrow. Live in studio, he was with us last segment, is a dear friend of both of ours, dear, dear friend of mine, and Danielle and his wife, Jessica, of course. And that is the great Corey Zelnick, a real estate mogul, just a really good guy and a real New York guy. Corey, welcome back.
Thanks, Sid. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have
you. So great to see Bernie.
Wasn't it great to see him?
Oh, fabulous. Yeah.
He's fighting hard. He's fighting hard.
Yep.
It's a battle. It's a battle. Oh. And it's taking its toll. He's completely different than he was a month ago.
Yeah.
But he'll be back to where he was a month ago, I think, before you know it. So.
Yeah, I said to him, I said, win today. Win today, and you know you do tomorrow? You win tomorrow.
Well, you sound like Tom Thibodeau, the coach of the Knicks.
Yeah.
I mean, but in all seriousness, you are a very big sports fan, an avid Knicks fan at that. You know, it's funny. I was watching Craig Carton and Evan Roberts yesterday. I couldn't take inflation, and I couldn't take it. And I never watched that. But it was on CBS, and they were discussing the Brooklyn Nets. And the conversation was, because Evan's a big Net fan, the conversation was in the history of New York sports. And I thought it was a good conversation. Has there ever been a team with a collection of talent? Now, you have to understand, the Nets have three certain Hall of Famers. Kyrie Irving, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Kevin Durant, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Certainly, James Harden is going to the Hall of Fame. Even Blake Griffin is up for discussion, but I doubt it. But three certain Hall of Famers. When was the last time a New York team had that talent and didn't even play for a championship?
Oh, I can't even tell you.
Maybe never.
Maybe never. I mean, when you think about a loaded team, you go all the way back to the Knicks championships in 73.
But they won twice.
They did win. That's what I'm saying. So you
some say the Mets, and I agree with this, should have won more than once.
Loaded. And the Yankees were loaded for a stretch where they didn't win. They won a lot. They won a lot with the core four, but they didn't win every single year.
Well, but they got to the World Series six times.
No, they did. They did.
Yeah. I think this is the most talented team maybe ever. It was a cute discussion, but
it is. It's
just to take you away from the everyday nonsense. So you and I discussed this last week. There is a growing number of New Yorkers that are leaving the city. I'm hopefully leaving the city before you know it. I've had enough. And there's certainly a growing group of people that are staying here that are losing faith, even with the new mayor and all that, that this city will ever, ever, ever be good again. You're not one of those people. Why?
I'm not. Never mind that I'm born and raised here and I love it. I live here and I work here and everything like that. But the you have to stay positive. And you always joke about Jerry Seinfeld 2 years ago and all of that stuff.
Well, he did that column. He wrote that story in The New Yorker. And he was like, I'm never leaving. And he spent 9 months in the Hamptons.
And by the way, that was the last time you heard from him.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So and I still show up. And there's you know, when you look at it, and I'm not overly statistical. There are office leases being signed. Everybody talks about working from home. Office leases are being signed. I could sit here chapter and verse.
There are still a ton of them that are not being signed. Right?
No, agreed. But if you saw what was happening, and I'm not asking you to read the real estate news, people that their companies are believing the city. I deal with retailers, as you know, mostly in the food sector and mostly in the medical sector, and they're taking up space. They're growing. They want to be here. They know it for the long term. People are renting apartments. You can't get an apartment. We talked about this last
time.
That's
true.
There are no more concessions. Rental rates are at the highest they've been since pre-pandemic days, like almost ever. And so I think that there's a long-term belief. And we did this. You and I did this during the pandemic. And you said, when's it coming back? When's it coming back? And I think some point last year I had said to you in July. And it did. And then what happened was Omicron came around. First it was Delta, then it was Omicron, and it slowed things down. And now I'm going to tell you again. I know we're sitting here in January. I'm going to tell you after the summer, I know it's a long ways away, the city will be back.
See, I'm more nervous, and you're right. Certainly the COVID was the thing that really tossed us on our ass.
Yeah.
And Delta continued that, so did Omicron. But I'm more worried about the crime and the filth and the homeless and these types of things which Eric Adams is supposed to combat. In the meantime, he's telling you I'm crazy, he doesn't really exist. I'm more worried about that than this virus.
I agree with you 100%. And I want to get on the phone with Bo, and I want to go meet Eric and talk to him.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you're a New Yorker, a successful guy. We need people like you here. The bottom line is you, John Catsimatidis, we need people like you here. What are your thoughts on Eric Adams?
Right now, I'm a little set back.
Disappointed.
I'm very disappointed. I did not like the white supremacy comment last week. I mean, where did that come from? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And this crime thing, you got to jump on it. You got to jump on it. I know you talked about what he said. It's, you know, it's perception. That, you know, that's BS. It's BS. It's real. We're living it every single day. You know, I was down at the game yesterday. He showed up to make the opening Martin Luther King remark, which was very nice. He sat there for a few minutes. They donated some money to the United
Negro
College
He Fund. Was at a Knick game. The Knicks are the team in this city, and he talked about his affinity for the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, you talk about being completely tone deaf. That's a small thing, what basketball team you're rooting for. But he even screwed that up yesterday.
Of course. But you know what? I could live with that.
Right.
I could live with that. Don't screw up the subway stuff. Screw up Knicks and Nets.
Right, right.
You know, get on board with fixing up this crime. I mean, it's awful. It's awful. There's you know, you have the crime situation. What the virus is doing, where it's hurting companies. I have companies that are ready to open up stores, literally. And I say to them, when's the opening date? They show me it's all built out. Give me staff and I'll open.
No staff.
No staff.
Wow.
And what's happening is that some employees, they'll send a picture of their cousin's positive test.
Yeah.
Send it into their employer and say, I got to be out for 5 days.
Wow.
And what can you do?
Nothing.
People's
nothing.
Hands are tied.
Yeah.
And that also hurts.
I did see that the old Joseph Abboud store in the downstairs of your building is still vacant.
Yes.
Are you going to rent that? Is that yours to rent? That is your store, right?
It's mine to rent. We're having problems. We're in the heart of Midtown.
49th and Madison should be perfect.
It's perfect, but there's still nobody around. If I have a friend out in the West Coast, and I showed her a video of my outside of my window at 49th and Madison at lunchtime last week. It was nobody there.
Nobody there.
Nobody there.
Is what's it called doing any business? The big restaurant over there, Del Frisco's.
Del Frisco's? Modest.
Modest
business. Because the office workers are not here. The companies are keeping them out now, supposedly until March.
March.
You know, they keep pushing it. But it's going to be a long haul.
You've been right. You said July. It came back in July. Now you got the viruses and you got the crime. Hopefully the new mayor is able to combat that. Give me your final prediction, Corey. I don't expect it to be what it was years ago. I'm realistic. It may never be the same. It may never be the same. But give me your honest prediction. What month, when will we see New York at least resemble the great city that you maintain it still is?
Labor Day.
Labor Day?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Because what's going to happen is people are going to start to feel good in the springtime, and then everybody's going to summer vacation.
Right.
And then it'll be Labor Day.
Wow. All right. Okay. Labor Day it is, huh?
That's my call.
Well, listen, you've been on the money.
Yep.
So Labor Day it is.
Yes.
Labor Day New York is back.
I look forward to it.
But you're happy. You're married. You got a beautiful wife.
Thank you. You know, you're so kind. You talk about Jessica. You talk about my daughter, Bailey.
I do. I love your daughter. Yeah. Bailey's in Maryland doing great, right?
Actually, Thursday I have to take her back to school.
Oh, right. I get confused where we are calendar year.
They get a Christmas break that's a month long.
Oh, but is this show up again for President's Weekend and all that February?
She doesn't get that. No,
no. No, okay.
Get any of that.
So she'll come up for spring break. Is she already a sophomore or a junior?
She's a sophomore.
Sophomore, okay.
And she'll go away for spring break in March with her girlfriends.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Get
ready.
Get ready. I'm not ready.
Yep.
Well, it's great to see you. And it's nice of you to come in and see Bernard. Bernard really does love you. You're a great friend to all of us. So.
Thank you, and it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me. I always enjoy it.
So handsome, too.
Yeah, thank
you. Handsome guy, Corey Zelnick. Such a good-looking guy. For folks who want to contact you, how do they do that?
Instagram, Corey Zelnick. Zelnickco.com is the website. And like I always say, if you feel like going old school, call me. 212-223-2200.
There you go. That's Corey Zelnick, everybody. That's a good man right there, whether it's business or just pleasure. Grabbing a burger at lunch, that's the man right there.
Now, it's time to beat Bernie.
It's time to beat Bernie.
Sponsored by Fearless Boilers and Pavilion Tankless Water Heaters.
You think you can beat Bernie?
Good luck.
It's time to beat Bernie.
Out of gun. Alrighty, not time to beat Bernie today, but beat Sid, as Bernie headed out a little bit early today. So another edition of the Beat Sid game, again sponsored by Pete Morgan and Peerless Boilers. Check them out at peerlessboilers.com and paviliontankless.com for dealing near you. Peerless Boilers, America's best boilers. Today we got Adam in Cranford, New Jersey, a sales associate. What's going on, Adam?
How are you guys today?
We're all right. How about you, buddy?
Doing okay.
All right, hanging in there on a Tuesday?
Sure am. It's my one day off a week, so
there you go. Well, listen, after all the rain and all that stuff yesterday, we got the sun out today, so you can't complain.
No.
All right. All right, good. You ready to get into the game? Let's dive right into it.
Let's go.
All righty, buddy. Number one, what is the name of the office building under siege in the movie Die Hard?
Nakatomi Plaza.
Very good. You know your Die Hard, huh, Adam?
I mean, the first one.
Yeah, doesn't everybody. All right, on to number two. In 1928, what New York Rangers coach famously stepped in to play goalie during a Stanley Cup playoff game?
Oof. New York Rangers coach, 1928?
did you say?
Yeah, 1928 was the year.
We're going way back. Hockey would be my one sport I know the least about, especially going back that far. I don't have an answer to this one.
Give me a guess.
I mean, I literally have nothing here.
You don't even know it was on the team in 1928.
I mean, 1928 hockey, I got nothing.
Yeah, no, I wasn't around then either. All right.
Wrong, you two-legged bag of anthrax, you'll be Jesus.
That's a tough one. All right, you ready for number three? Let's bounce back here.
Yes. All right, let's go.
Which family member accompanies Charlie to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory?
What, one more time?
Which family member accompanies Charlie to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory?
That would be his grandpa.
What was the grandpa's name?
Joe.
Bang, bang. Very good, Adam. 2 for 3. You're off to a hot start. If only you were alive in 1928.
Yeah.
All right. Number four. What number does Derrick Rose currently wear for the New York Knicks?
Ooh, Derrick Rose. Wow. Oh, man. I'm going to go with 7.
Wrong, you two-legged back of anthrax, you'll be Jesus.
Just 3 off. Number 4. Ooh, number 4, okay. The Rose currently wears for the New York Knicks. All right, number 5. Let's end with a win here. Who holds the record for most wins in the MLB Home Run Derby with 3?
MLB Home Run Derby. Okay. 3 wins. Oof.
I can say for certain you were alive for these.
Yeah, and I watched them too. That I can't believe I'm kind of choking on this one here. Boy.
You want a hint?
Yes, I do, of course.
He was a left-handed bat.
Left-handed hitter, home run derby. Tempted to say Ken Griffey Jr., but I don't think he won more than one.
Give me something.
Oh, boy, this is terrible. Not Josh Hamilton. I know he had the big one that one year.
Running out of time.
I go Griffey Jr. I know that's wrong, but... That's right. Wow.
Yeah, you nailed it. How about it?
All right.
I gave you a little extra time there because I like you, Adam.
Appreciate it.
All right, I'm not going to give Sid the same amount of time. But I'm looking at him right now. He's just having a conversation in the hallway like we don't have a game to play. Here he comes. I'm going to throw you on hold here for Adam for a second, okay?
Go ahead.
All right, thanks, Bob. All right, big guy, you got to get – what do you got to get? You got to get 4 out of 5 to win.
All right, let's go.
All right.
I'm not going to Google it like the player. They told me he was Googling stuff.
He wasn't Googling anything.
All right.
Adam's a very honest player.
Okay, if you say so. I don't know. He's from Cranford, New Jersey. That place is filled with crooks like Luke Legrano.
And where do you come from?
I come from Brooklyn, New York.
Are you
and
ready?
I lived in Tenafly, New Jersey. I have friends in Cranford and Clark and all over the place, and I was all over New Jersey yesterday for that funeral. Let's go. Come on.
All right. Just like the Uyghurs, nobody cares, okay?
Right. Yeah, you're right.
All right. Let's go. Number one, what is the name of the office building under siege in the movie Die Hard?
The Nakatomi Building. Something like that. Nakatomi. Something like that. It doesn't matter.
Nakatomi Plaza, but you got the hard part.
I just saw it again 2 nights ago.
Did you?
Yeah, I like the cop. Wasn't he in that show with Urkel?
I don't know.
He played the father. You know, the cop. The black guy.
I don't know.
Say that. Why do you have to say that? I always get yelled at home. When I'm like, I like that guy, the black guy. Why do you have to say that for? Well, because that kind of differentiates him from the white guy.
Yeah.
I get yelled at all the time.
Okay.
All the time.
Well, you're in trouble. Yeah. All right. You ready for number two? In 1928, what New York Rangers coach famously stepped in to play goalie during a Stanley Cup playoff game?
Is this true?
This is true.
He was the coach, so it wasn't Gump Worsley.
No.
He was the coach, and the coach back then was... I'm going to go with Joe Gorgia.
Wrong, you two-legged back of anthrax. I
thought you would have gotten that one, given that you were alive in 1928.
Who was it? Harry something or other?
Lester Patrick.
Yes, Lester Patrick, the Patrick children.
Yeah, you knew that one.
Yeah.
All right, number three. Which family member accompanies Charlie to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory?
Oh, my God, I have no idea.
What do you mean you have no idea?
I mean, stop it. I saw that movie like 30 years ago with my son, Gabriel.
How do you have no idea who accompanies Charlie to the Chocolate Factory?
Because I don't remember.
Well, give me
a nice picture of me and Corey Zundick. We look like gay lovers in this, Mike Garcia. You'd have to admit that. Our chests are kind of up against each other, but it's a nice picture.
Are you changing the
I'm going to go
topic?
With Dolores.
Wrong, you two-legged bag of anthrax should be Jesus.
No. Where'd you come up with that idea?
I don't know. Anytime I don't know what answer, I just use that name.
It's like Helter Stelter. Okay, here we go.
Now.
Coming up, number four. What number does Derrick Rose currently wear for the Knicks?
Oh, man. Six?
That's your answer?
Hold on. Clearly, that's the wrong answer.
You were so quick to the punch.
He's in the 30s, maybe. I haven't gone to a Knick game since Seagulls took me to the Indiana Pacers weeks and weeks ago. So I'm going to go. Derrick Rose is number three.
Wrong, you two-legged back of that.
You were close.
Four.
Number four. One off.
One more. Come on, let's go. This game has to end before I turn 60.
Yeah. All right, number five. Who holds the record for most wins in the MLB Home Run Derby with three?
Is that right? Somebody won it three times already?
Yeah, I'll give you the same hint I gave you.
You know, I haven't watched the MLB Derby once. Not once in my whole life. In fact, I don't watch the All-Star game, any of those festivities.
Well, you should have watched. In fact, I'll give you the same hint. It was a left-handed bat.
Oh, that just gave it away. I have no idea.
No.
He won it three times?
Yeah.
The home run hitting contest.
Yeah. That's what the home run derby is.
Yeah. You know who's won it twice, actually, is a guy here in the Mets.
Yeah. Okay.
My answer is going to be Ken Griffey Jr.
Good guess. You and Adam were on the same page.
Did I lose?
Yeah, you still lost. Oh. You lost.
Okay, fine.
I don't know what to tell you.
So good. Give Adam the money and the mug and...
Well, you got to talk to him for 2 seconds.
All right. Hi, Adam.
How are you? How are you doing today?
You know, it's an interesting question. How am I doing today? The funeral was brutal yesterday. Bernie's not well, and that kind of freaked me out just a little bit today. And Carol lost her mother. And yet, with all that said, I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm sorry to hear about all the bad news. Please send Bernie our best wishes, for sure.
For sure, I will. Thank you. Thank you. What do you do for a living?
I'm in appliance sales at a Westfield. I actually spoke to you last week about John Resnick and friends with Jennifer Harrison.
Oh, that's you. Okay. Oh, absolutely. Sure. That was a very memorable phone call. Absolutely. All right. Well, in fact, I want to get you a number. You said you sell household appliances?
I do. I do.
What, for like kitchens and stuff? Huh?
Yep. It's called Top Line. Everybody knows Top Line, though.
All right. Hey, take Adam's number. I'm going to call you one of these days, okay?
Yeah, I'll take care of
you. All right, pal. Thank you. That's Adam in Cranford, New Jersey. We'll take a short break. He's a nice guy. We'll wrap things up on this Tuesday edition right after this.
Beat Bernie. Sponsored by Fearless Boilers and Pavilion Tankless Water Heaters on 77 WABC.
Folks, we're done to Iris Google Dolls. You wasted it. Play tomorrow morning when we come back on the air. Great job, all you guys, Justin and Luke and Mike and Deb and Frank. Great having Bernie back in studio. He'll be back tomorrow.